Yes, love is begging door to door, but finds the silence like no one lives there anymore.
Live from the Democratic National Convention, it's the SideQuest episode 411, also known as the Information Sode. I'm Dally Domofsky. I'm also joined by Mike Bachman.
It's not called the Information Sode. Please no.
And Steven Strom.
What information could we possibly share with people?
We don't have any. Like, we there's one thing that the side quest is, and that's consistent, and we don't have any information each week.
Yeah, the well is dry, Dally. The well is dry.
We're consistently bad. Well, we're consistent in at least in introductions and that we have them. Again, thank you guys for...
Fuck that! No! You don't get to pretend that's a segue. We're not engaging in revisionist history that was a decent segue by ignoring it. Apathy is the greatest blight on mankind, and I'm not letting that pass.
So, apathy. I'd be like, guys, fuck, guys, did you hear about the flesh-eating virus? Yeah. Speaking about flesh, so there's a conversation right now about women in Tomb Raider going on about...
No, stop it. Martin Luther King did not die for this.
I am all for talking about
Speaking of dreams,
flesh.
Kirby's Dream Land is going to be included in...
Oh, my God.
These are like the most racist, sexist segues ever.
I just got the dream thing. Oh, okay.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, speaking of racism, did you see that Reddit is referring to the Big Bang Theory as nerd blackface?
Which, oh my God, and it totally is.
Yeah,
it's totally Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, no, Justin McElroy posted on Twitter. He says that is offensively irreverent, but fuck if it isn't pretty much on the money.
Wait, was this like news or something?
No, Ben Kuchera tweeted about it.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, like, this just in, Reddit is referring to something as something. Like, in fact, Reddit is a beast, man. There's always going to be shit going down on Reddit.
It's the Kraken. It's the things going down are the chips. Of
release the Reddit.
Tentacles.
Yeah.
I'll bet you there's...
There are a lot of tentacles on Reddit, though.
I was about to say, do not go to r/tentacles.
r/spacedicks.
Space trubs. Hey, Dally, what's up? Are you in charge of this podcast? Because we're sure not. Oh, shit. Did we actually lose Dally?
Yeah, I think so. That's all right, though.
I was muted again.
His wife came in, did a flying backflip, and hit the mute button in front of him.
I'm here. I'm here, guys.
Okay, thanks.
I had myself muted.
So, Strom, how about the Eve, you know?
Eve's real good.
Fuck.
So
Let's
good.
Have you seen the new ship models?
Not Eve.
I have not seen the new ship models yet, but to be fair, I hadn't seen the old ship models.
Those models are a piece of ship.
Nope.
What did I tell you about Martin Luther King?
Oh my God.
Martin Luther King.
Martin
Luther King. No, clearly no human being at that time could have brought the message to our people that he did. So as we know, Martin Luther King fought Barack Obama first world black supremacy in 1969. God. Obama was forced to go into stasis sleep for 40 years and unleashed his terrible power upon America.
Oh, that's horribly irrelevant, but pretty much, you know, I'll be damned if it's not right on the money.
Oh my God, Martin Luther King is going to have to be our podcast art for this week.
Uh-huh. Oh shit, yeah, we just like add Andorian eye stocks to him or whatever.
Oh God, this is it. It's over.
No, fuck, Bachman, the FCC can't fine you for what you say or showing nudity anymore. We can do whatever we want. It's free love, man.
No, Mike, don't show nudity, please. Don't show nudity.
I'm already taking my pants off.
Good thing this is a video podcast because now everybody can see it.
Oh, no, I've got like a Justin TV going on right now.
Oh, okay.
So people can see my dick.
So video games, guys, and not racism.
Video games!
Although I'd want to see Martin Luther King's birth certificate.
Well, I mean, he's pretty open. His name, it's right in the name, Dally.
I heard he wasn't. It's true. I heard he wasn't really Martian. He was born in Hawaii.
Oh, shit.
Venusian.
He was born in a TARDIS.
And he was born on Hawaii. He was born in Hawaii, Mars.
Yeah. It's like far Paris, enough Texas. Away. Oh, my God, guys. All right, so video games, what have you been playing? Let's start with something that's not Eve ever. And Eric, what have you been playing? Eric is not here.
Holy shit, I just picked up on that. I wouldn't have even noticed if you hadn't mentioned it. I didn't even know that you said the wrong fucking name.
No, I didn't. I purposely said Eric because he's not here.
In the meantime,
I'm going to go on to Steven. What have you been playing?
Okay, I'm gonna do my I'm back to my old garrulous ways, Dally. So I'm gonna have you guys choose what you want me to talk about. I've got three new games that people will care about that aren't like 80 years old. I've got Gravity Rush for Vita. I've got Magic 2013 Duels of the Planeswalkers for The Gathering. That's the title for iPad. And Quantum Conundrum. I beat Quantum Conundrum today. Which one do you want me to talk about
first?
So
let's start with Magic, because I am a huge fan of Magic the Gathering. And I grew up playing it, but I stopped because all the friends that I played the actual physical card game with in the 90s, in the early 90s, all stopped playing or moved away or died of dysentery and stuff. But
Well, they only had 20 health to begin with,
That's true. They only had plus one white, and you know it was really bad. Anyways,
plus one white. What game are you?
And so, anyways, I need to get into Magic: The Gathering again, and I've heard a lot of good things about the iOS game. And actually, I think it's Duels of the Planeswalkers 2012 on my Xbox, but I downloaded it but never started playing it, so.
Sounds about right.
With every single game that I have, it just goes on my pile of shame. But I think I've been itching to get back into it, and I know going digital is going to be the only way I'll be able to play against some of you guys. So tell me a bit about I'm loading up 2013 right now. Tell me a little bit about it.
Okay, so Magic the Gathering, Duels of the Planeswalkers, 2013 is the third in Wizards of the Coast's annual Magic video game thing. I think it's the first one that is available on the iPad, which is what I'm playing it on. And it is definitely... So the last one I played was 2011. I never did play 2012, so I don't know how much of the stuff in 2013 is new. But it definitely from just a total gameplay perspective, it is definitely Magic the Gathering. From the fact, you know, you've got your whites cards, your plains cards, you know, you got your forest cards, there's five colors of mana, which you use, and each school has like different abilities that it kind of focuses on. So like blue cards are a lot of like spells that kind of control the battlefield. So you have like cards that can cancel other people's spells and stuff like that. Or whereas like red cards are all about doing a lot of damage really fast. With very low mana costs and stuff like that. And each of them has that kind of stuff going on. It follows the same structure as previous Magic the Gathering games. So it's like kind of like a ladder fight of card game battles between you and sort of the Planeswalkers, which I guess are some kind of like, they are in the books, like Magic the Gathering novelizations. I cannot confirm that necessarily, but there are some kind of characters. There is some kind of lore going on here, but that doesn't matter because you're just playing through the game to fight more and better people through the campaign, and then you unlock new decks, and each time you beat a character, you unlock a new card that you can use for that deck that you beat them with, up to 30 cards, and you can upgrade your decks a little bit from that perspective, which is actually kind of one of my big problems with the games is that still, this has been going on for the last three games, you have a certain number of cards that you can add and swap out from your current deck, and you have to have a minimum of 60 cards in the deck. But you can at no point like just create your own custom deck out of all the cards that you have in the game, which is one of my favorite parts of Magic: The Gathering, the actual physical card game,
is being able to create my own decks and try to like synergize them and make them as like crazy powerful as possible. So that's kind of disappointing that that's still not in the game yet. I can understand why it's like that, but I don't understand why they wouldn't just give me the option if I wanted to. Like, I can understand for somebody who just wants to plop down their $10 and doesn't want to get, you know, who isn't used to playing Magic the Gathering. Maybe this is their first foray into it. Maybe they're not aware of the world, I think, the most popular trading card game, which is not saying much, to be sure. But so, yeah, it's but it's fun. It, like I say, it is Magic the Gathering, including all of the faults of that, which is to say that sometimes it can be incredibly, incredibly cheap, as I was talking to Mike Bachman about the other day. But Mike, you said that was a thing.
And that's exactly what you wanted out of a game, though, isn't it? Because you just said that you were like building your decks and making them as powerful as possible, which would imply cheap.
Yeah, yeah. But the problem is the AI is just sometimes pretty cheap.
I actually kind of learned, and I haven't played 2013, but I played the first duel of the Planeswalkers, and I played 2012, and I can only assume that it's more of the same. I mean, I found that after a while, you kind of learn how the computer is going to think, and you can completely just get around it. And honestly, you can get around it in some ways that you probably shouldn't be able to. Mm. I don't know. I prefer that game playing with other people.
Yeah, me too. There is multiplayer in this. There is. Right. I have not tried it out yet because I was going to play with Dally, but Dally has not. Dally's just getting on that train.
Yeah, and Dally doesn't really play games, so
I do. No. I would actually. I will be playing. I will be playing this because it is multiplayer and it's over iOS, which I have access to. Right. And I'll be on vacation. Actually, you know what? We didn't talk about what we did, but I'll have my iPad with me when I go up go to Florida next week, so I can I'll be able to play games against people. Which is
nice. It's Game Center supported, so like it should be pretty easy to get a game going. And that's where I'm really excited about, because that's really how you should be playing Magic, is against mm-hmm. other people.
Right.
Like, it is so much better against human.
God, I'm such a hypocrite, because like on the one hand, like I don't really, when Street Fighter 4 came out, like I was so pissed, like, you know, that it was kind of like dumbed down, and they kind of got back to their like, you know, Street Fighter 2 roots, and like kind of simplified things a little bit. And that kind of like pissed me off. But in the case with Magic, where I'm, you know, where I maybe don't play quite as much Magic and I'm not really good at building decks, I'm glad that they don't have the ability to build your own decks, because then it kind of levels the playing field, means that I can pick it up and be even with the other people that are playing online.
There is that. I mean, there is also the, you know, you, what if there is the, you should be the, in my opinion, like if nothing else, you could have the option to like say, hey, in the single player, you can make your own deck and you can make your own custom deck and do whatever you want. But then like in the multiplayer, you have to use one of these predetermined decks like you would use.
Yeah, but if you give a mouse a cookie, right? Like you put that in, they'll be like, well, why don't they let you do that in custom games of multiplayer? And like, you know, it's they would either put it in or don't put it in. I don't really see the point in half-assing it and putting it in one group, but not another.
I think people would get over it pretty quickly. They would be like, whoa, people
have this claim. Kind of like how people got over the fact that you couldn't make decks to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Well, I mean, I bought it. I knew you couldn't build your own decks, and I still bought it.
Right.
That's the thing. Is like,
yeah, I think that's buy these games. That's the point, is it kind of, you know, it doesn't really hurt the game at all. Like, there's a million ways where not being able to build your own deck could completely destroy the game, but it doesn't. So, well, I mean, they did a pretty good job with the decks that they put in there.
And the other nice thing that this does is from what I'm doing right now is just trying to play it. It and listening to you guys, it doesn't replace the actual card game, right? It doesn't replace people going out and picking up the cards for themselves.
And you know what? That's probably a big part of why they don't do it too, is because they still want people to go out there and buy booster packs and, you know, get that $4 a pack for random ass cards in the hope that, you know, you'll get something amazing and then you never will.
And that's the it does for me. And I think they're getting their money's worth out of the people that aren't going to go and like play Friday Night Magic every week. Yeah. You know, they're able to buy this game and play casually whenever they just get the inkling to get back into Magic, but aren't willing to invest in cards.
And I think that is like the best thing about Magic 2013 is Magic 2013, or just all the Magic duels of the Planeswalker games in general, is, yo, game is $10. Like, it's compared to what you have to pay to stay competitive in real ass Magic, like $10 is really fucking cheap. Like, so I know they expand on it with booster packs and stuff like that later on. They have, at least what they have with the 2012 and 2011. You know, I'm interested to see if they do that with or how they go about doing that on the iPad, because traditionally a lot of iPad updates are free. So we'll see how that goes. I doubt that'll be the case.
I would have loved to have seen some sort of cross-platform support. Obviously not with like Xbox or whatever, but I mean Steam and iOS. There's
Steam is on iOS, so you know.
Wait, what?
Steam is on iOS. You can download Steam.
Well, you can download like a Steam companion app. It's
yeah.
not. That's
yeah,
not
I mean, no, no, Steam. No. But yeah, what I'm saying is like Valve is aware of the iOS platform. They are not ignoring it completely.
They did announce cross-platform play between like Game Center on the Mac and then Game Center on iOS. So I mean, potentially they could release a version of it on the Mac App Store that you could play with iOS.
I doubt that'll happen, but that would be cool.
Well, maybe not in 2013, but possibly 2014.
You know, 2025, when people actually play games on the Mac.
Well, if man is still alive, son of
a... Yeah, exactly.
God ought to make it by then, Deli.
So, well, one thing that I've always liked about...
Don't push God on me, Strom.
Don't push your Martian God on me.
Oh, shit, that's been a running oof. Me and Mike.
So yeah, all right. So the one thing I've always loved about the Magic games was the cards is just the art. And
yeah.
One thing I actually know about this game is that they've kept all the art intact, but now it's like it's in high def. It's in high res. I mean, the artwork is beautiful on the cards.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, and it is the cards. It is basically just the cards in the game. It's even got like the little. The little artist's signature in the bottom of the corner of every card, now all that kind of stuff, which is you're right. That's always cool. That and got the little flavor text. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is Magic the Gathering outside of the deck building thing, outside of booster packs and custom decks. This is Magic the Gathering on an iPad. This is not some kind of on whatever system you bought on. This is not some kind of simulacrum. This is the goddamn game. Like this is the way that the 2011, 2012, 2013 works is that. Every year, Wizards of the Coast releases like a new league of Magic cards or something like that. You know, like a new set, and they introduce new abilities and new concepts into the and techniques and into the game that weren't in there before. And so that's actually kind of another thing is I don't that part of my issue with 2013. It's not to do with the game itself, but it's to do with I don't think that the 2013 expansion, whatever it's called, they all have kind of weird names. I don't necessarily think any of the changes that they've made to the formula and any of the new cards are particularly crazy or interesting. Like 2010 added, I think it was 2010 or it might have been Zendikar, which came out right after 2010, was like Planeswalkers, like these actual card types called Planeswalkers. And I have not seen any of those in 2013. What they did add was like an ability called Exalted and an ability called Battlecry, which are both like abilities in the game, which I won't get too deep into because all the people out there crying nerd right about now. But I just don't think it's anything about like new expansion. Well, Exalted makes every card, if you attack with one card that has Exalted, every other card that has Exalted adds +1/+1 to that card as it's attacking.
Oh, there's like fucking so many versions of that, almost that same exact ability though.
Well, strap in, because Battlecry makes it so that any card that is also attacking at the same time gets +1/+1 for every thing on the for everybody who's attacking with Battlecry. So, you know, if Exalted makes one character really, really, really powerful, and Battlecry makes all the characters or all the cards really powerful, but then like. Exalted has like cards that will make it so that only one unit can attack at a time and stuff like that. So.
You know, if nothing else, just the fact that you can tap individual lands and decide which ones you want to use is like the best. Because sometimes you'd have to like the order that you played your cards in 2012 and the original, you had to like kind of trick the system so that the system didn't inadvertently spend a land that you needed for another card that turn. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, so that is That is one of the major improvements over this version, in this version over the others. Yeah, you can tap, you can select what mana, you know, all cards have like a mana cost in the game. And in this one, you can select what colors and which specific cards you have. So you can keep certain colors in at bay or certain special mana for other cards that you may want to play later and stuff like
that.
Don't
do that. Don't do that. Don't make this show accessible for people who don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, everybody else is already tuned up. I know. It's Dally's fault for starting with fucking Magic the Gathering.
I freaking love Magic.
It's great. I keep trying to get back into it, but it's so damn expensive. But, you know, $10.
$10? Well,
on iPad, no, you know.
You still have to unlock the full game.
No. That is what you pay to unlock the full game. It is free.
Excuse me, Steven. You have to buy an iPad first.
Oh god, that's like $600. So this is a $685 game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people are really ready for a dedicated Magic the Gathering device, though. That's what
I thought it was really interesting when Neo Geo when SNK released a Neo Geo that just played Magic. that was surprising to me. No, that is another thing that was maybe worth mentioning is it costs $10 on all platforms. On iPad, you can get like you download the game itself for free, and you have three decks and you can play through the single player. But in order to unlock the rest of the decks and multiplayer, you have to pay $9.99, which is the standard price of the game anyway. And then that unlocks all the decks, and then multiplayer to play too. And then presumably they will expand on it with expansion packs like they have the past two games. So
sweet.
You know what? Magic is a game I'm totally down with paying $10. I mean, I would almost think it would be kind of interesting if I could just like, maybe not on the iPad, but on PC or something, download a Magic the Gathering client and just pay like a $10 a year subscription fee to just be fed the new expansions and stuff like that, or something like that.
It's worth mentioning that this isn't the first time that they've tried to make a Magic the Gathering game. Mm-hmm. And everything that they've tried up until now has failed, but they've really nailed Duel of the Planeswalkers like on all fronts, like yeah, on price, know, on, you know, the gameplay is spot on.
Yeah, $10 is cheap for a downloadable game now. Like,
right.
Like, you know, when this first started, $10 was the norm, but they have kept up with the $10 even as we've seen games go up to 15 and now even 20 for downloadable games now. So,
you know,
I mean, sure, like, let's go ahead, Dally.
Well, no, I was going to mention that one of the reasons they kept failing with their previous games is because they didn't hit the they didn't, you know, capture the card idea right. They kept trying to include
part of the cards.
They kept trying to include things to make it more game like, more video game like, as opposed to just
right.
being true to the cards, and it ruined it.
Part of the cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. They tried to make it like a. I remember the first Magic the Gathering game I ever played, it was kind of like Magic. Like, you played the cards, but then the creatures showed up on screen, and then you controlled the creatures, and like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah,
that's not
exactly.
Yeah, like, I am not invested in the Magic the Gathering lore. The thing I like about Magic the Gathering is cards and numbers and tapping mana. If I'm not tapping mana, I'm not happy.
I have that t-shirt, actually.
You gotta tap that grass. Field.
And Dolly's showing how out of touch he is again. He's like, is that not what the kids are saying?
Making jokes that your grandma loves. Dally Domofsky.
I have Magic the Gathering cards from, I think, 1992 or 93.
Yeah, totally.
So, fuck you guys.
He's pulling out shit like Band-Aid.
I got like two, bitch. I've been playing Magic since it like came out, so what's up?
I think
you've been playing Magic since like, didn't it come out in the 70s or something?
No. Magic came out in the 90s.
Yeah, it was 92 or 93, I think it came out. I have cards going back as far as Series 2 or Series 3, those early series, before the expansion.
I'm pretty sure I started playing Magic in 95. So.
Okay, so I'm ahead of you. But then,
because I'm better than you, right?
No, I'm that's horrible. What it means.
This episode of Whip 'em Out and Measure 'em brought to you by the SideQuest.
Whip out the problem cards is and measure like, your stack.
I pull out mine and it's a regular penis. Dally pulls out his and it's just a fucking icicle shoots out and stabs me in the heart.
Actually, I think
cold-blooded he is.
I think Dolly's is pretty sweet, though. Like, that came out wrong. But no, like, I don't think having an icicle that shoots out bullets is all that bad. That's all I'm saying.
You know,
no,
great.
No, he whips out his dick and, like, instead of a dick, like an icicle flies off and stabs me in the heart because he's so cold-blooded.
Okay. I'm not sure that's how science works. But...
sharp icicle. Yeah, well, okay, it is scientific. Like, did you not see that episode of Beakman's World?
I didn't. Were they talking about icicle dicks? No, I'm sorry. I missed it.
Well, no, well, okay. They talked about like how cold-blooded Dally is in an episode of Beakman's World. Specifically, it was weird. But no, the episode of Magic School Bus, now that was when they talked about icicle dicks specifically.
So this episode, we have racism-charged segues, Martin Luther King, and icicle dicks.
Uh-huh. No, don't make any mistake. Martin Luther King was part of the racist segue.
But they're segues that run on racism.
God.
Okay.
So that's Magic the Gathering Duels of the Planeswalker 2013.
Are there are there sites online that have the values of this? I'm going back to the cards, physical media. Are there sites online that have that show the values of some of the older cards and stuff? Is there any place I can look that up?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, cool.
Yes. All right. All over the place.
Yeah, the problem you'll find with like your older cards is like the only ones that people are really willing to pay money for are the ones that are still tournament legal.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
There are many.
Your 1992 card is not street legal.
Do you guys? Yeah, some of them, if they've kept the card in play, like, you know, there's cards that were in 1992 that like are still legal now. Those could still potentially be worth money if they're good enough.
Like cancel, they've been making cancel cards. They update the like color, or they update like what it looks like and shit like that. But if it's like a 1992 card, it's still, you know, called cancel, but it is, yeah, it's still legal.
Right.
Cool.
But yeah, that's how you keep a street.
I should give these out on side questing. That'd be fun.
Your magic cards?
Yeah.
Give them to me.
Who wants a stack? Who wants a stack of classic cards worth bajillions of dollars? Face. All right, what else have you been playing, Steven?
The other two were Gravity Rush and Quantum Conundrum. Go ahead and pick one.
Let's go with Quantum Conundrum, and then we'll finish. We'll let you finish.
Finish strong. That's what you're saying.
Well, they're all.
It's strong. Not successful unless everybody finishes. I just want you guys to know.
Exactly.
Can't finish until we talk about Gravity Rush.
Let's talk about Quantum Conundrum. We saw this at PAX East. Way back when, and then I ran past it over at the Squeenix booth at E3 a couple weeks ago. And there were quite a few people around it, and you have been playing it for review. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
So Quantum Conundrum is the new game from Kim Swift, who was one of the original people that worked on Portal, boy, does it show. You would kind of expect... or I would kind of expect anyway, them to try and push away from the Portal kind of comparisons, because Portal 2 cannot live up to the regardless of whether or not you think Portal 2 is a better game than Portal 1, Portal 2 could not even live up to like the weird cultural zeitgeist that was Portal 1. And so you would think they would be a little bit more careful about trying to draw comparisons to Portal with Quantum Conundrum, but boy, do they. Like let me lay this down for you. One of the achievements in the game is called Still Alive.
Oh, my goodness.
Just chew on that.
Yeah, like, it's like totally a Bee Gees reference. Oh. And we all know Kim Swift is actually related to the guy from the Bee Gees that just died, 6 degrees of separation, Martin Luther King, I have a dream. Let's do this.
Oh God,
that was horrible. I'm sorry. Anyways, continue.
Oh, man. Let's
still alive.
No, let's just do an entire podcast where we try to find familial connections between game developers and 1970s hit speed rock surf rock.
Speed rock. You at least pick something that's going to be a challenge, Steven.
Okay. Anyway, So the premise of the game is that you are a little boy who I don't think they actually ever name anything.
Yes, you are.
He's a special boy.
He's a special boy.
Who's a special boy? Mike's a special boy.
That's true.
Oh, they grew up so fast. I was not expecting the deep voice there. Anyway, sorry. You are a little boy who gets, I guess, in the opening animatic comic book cut, not comic book cutscene, but it is like a 2D animated cutscene kind of thing. It is almost a motion comic, which I don't know if I've I'm sure at some point or another I have espoused my opinions of motion comic cutscenes mm-hmm. in video games, which is fuck 'em. But they are sparse in Quantum Conundrum anyway. But yeah, so in the opening kind of cutscene, you find out you are a little boy whose mother has sent him to go hang out with his uncle, Professor or Dr. Quadrangle. Mm. Because she thinks that her brother, Quadrangle, your uncle, is lonely, living in this like giant manor on this side of a cliff that has been in their family for years or whatever. So you get there, and apparently you have been there many, many times before, or at least a few times before. And every time you're there, he shows you a new one of his inventions. And this time he shows you the IDS device, which is the interdimensional shift device, I believe. And it basically allows you to swap between one of five different dimensions, if you include our dimension as one of the five dimensions, as Kim Swift pointed out mm-hmm. at Boston to us. She said, I think her exact words were, there are five dimensions in the game. One of the dimensions is our dimension because give us a break. We're trying to make a video game.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, all right. Yeah, a little inside baseball there. Yeah, so there's the four dimensions, actual dimensions that like matter are heavy dimension, where everything is like kind of heavy and looks like it's made out of iron, kind of like almost like Silent Hill hell world almost. There's fluffy dimension, where everything looks like a like it's made of cottonelle toilet paper or something like that. It's got little stitches on it and stuff like that, as if it's been like made out like quilted. There is zero gravity dimension, which is pretty much or reverse gravity dimension, I guess, which does exactly what you would think it would do. And then there is slow-mo dimension, which is also exactly what you think it is, slow-motion dimension. So you go through the game, and it's like it is basically Portal from then on out without the portals. Actually, maybe that's a little bit unfair. It's like it is like a greatest hits of physics platforming puzzler games. Like it is, you know, you've got your time manipulation, you've got gravity manipulation, you've got physics manipulations, you've got the platforming of like a portal, you know, stuff, kind of all this stuff, like little tastes of all those kind of different ideas that get thrown into sort of indie games, all kind of thrown into this kind of non-adversarial sort of, I don't want to say childish, but it is sort of like got a sort of young storybook aesthetic to it, in like a almost Where the Wild Things Are style of like this, you know, this is made for kids, but it is not necessarily something that kids will be able to grasp all of the deeper meanings of. I mean, I'm giving a little bit too much credit there. It's not like Where the Wild Things Are in that, like, it you know, as an instant classic as that is. But it, you know, it's got a kind of a neat, goofy aesthetic to it. Quadrangle, Professor Quadrangle, is played by John DeLancey, who everybody on this podcast I'm sure knows is Q from Star Trek, and he was also in Torchwood, Miracle Day. Maybe Dally, I don't know how much you like Star Trek, but I know you'll pick up on a Torchwood Doctor Who reference.
Yes, sir.
So he's kind of like your condescending narrator guy who's like helping you through all the puzzles and stuff. One thing I noticed is I'm beginning to notice this in a couple of games. So I'm not sure if it's just me getting better at these kinds of games, or if it's just these games, you know, I've just selected these games, but it seems really easy. I beat it in 5 hours and 6 minutes, according to the in-game clock, and I never got to a puzzle where I think I got maybe to, like, three puzzles in the entire game that I felt like, okay, I just do not know how to solve this, and so I had to really sit down and chew it over for a little while. Other than that, like, every time I got stuck, it was because I kept dying or something like that, because I kept missing platforming, which, again, first-person platforming, by the way, in video games, stop it. Like, first-person platformers, enough. If I cannot see my feet or where my head is touching, especially if by touching my head to the ceiling or something, I can get knocked off of a flying block, I do not want to play that game.
It depends on how it's done, though. Like, Metroid Prime did it really well.
Yeah, but in Metroid Prime, in Metroid Prime, if you fell off of a cliff, you just restarted right where you were with lower health.
Right. Well, I mean, then it's not the first person platforming. That's the problem. It's how they're handling it. That's the problem.
Yeah, and you know that's definitely part of it. But I also think that like the platforming in like something like Metroid Prime is like much less intensive like this. Like in this game, there is like you will come up to like a big giant mouth, like a robot mouth that shoots off like a couch through the air. And what you need to do is you need to get above that giant mouth and then jump into the air above the mouth, time it so that you are above the mouth when it fires the couch, go into slow down time so that you can time it and land on top of the thing. Then you are flying through the flying on this couch through laser beams, like throughout the level. You're they actually call it couch surfing, through laser beams by altering gravity, by turning gravity upside down. So you fly above a laser beam and then you turn gravity back to normal, so the couch falls back down again. And then switching that, then when you get to a part where the couch can't, the couch has to fly through a laser beam, but you can't fly through the laser beam because you'll die. You have to turn the couch into a really, really, so it's made of metal, and then switch it back to zero gravity again before you fall into an acid pit, and then jump off the couch at the last minute to get onto a new platform, and then do it all over again onto another couch that you have just jumped onto in midair. Like that is one of the simpler things that you do in this game, or not maybe not simpler, but it is kind of an intermediate kind of puzzle, but. I will give them props for, like, as complicated as what I just described sounds, once you actually get into the thick of it, totally becomes second nature. Like, other than the fact that it gets tough when your head bumps the ceiling and you don't know where your head is because you are looking through your character's eyes and then you get knocked off the couch in midair and fall to your death, you know, stuff like that. Or when you have to get a running start off of a platform, but you don't know where your feet are, so you walk off the cliff before you hit the jump button, so you hit the jump button as you're falling to your death. That stuff can happen a couple of times, and that is kind of one of my bigger issues with first-person platformers, which is not such an issue with, like, say, something like Metroid Prime, because you have, like, a double jump or something. And partially, it's also worth noting that the kid in this game, he is a young 11-year-old boy, so they actually shifted the perspective down a bit so that, like, you can tell that your character is much shorter than your average first-person character usually is. So on the one hand, it means that you don't run into instances where you will be bumping your head too often, but it also means that you, A, maybe not super used to that lower perspective, and B, your jump doesn't feel as amazing as it would in, say, something where you were like 11, you know, you were 6 feet tall. Or maybe it's just a perspective thing, but it is a little disconcerting being like half the size of a normal first-person character. So yeah,
we noted that at the PAX as well. It's kind of an awkward, size to be at.
Yeah, I think it helps with the. I think it helps set it apart a little bit. I think it's kind of unique, and it kind of creates this image, like this kind of feeling of being smaller than everything else in your environment, being a little bit too petite to maybe do the things that you would be able to without this IDS glove, and that is kind of cool. Like, I'm gonna admit, I feel like I'm being really down on this game, but it is actually really fun.
Cool.
I do want to mention the ending. I won't spoil it.
maybe not a good idea.
Spoilers, but it is one of the most, like, hey guys, wait for the sequel endings I've played in recent memory. Like, it is one of those, like, oh, hey, we're DLC coming. Like,
did you finish Diablo 3?
Oh, I did not.
Oh, God.
But yeah, it is very much almost to the point. No, I don't want to spoil anything. But yeah, it is, and they have already announced that there are at least two pieces of DLC. It's one of those games where you can buy the season pass for the game for the DLC that isn't out yet, which is by itself is a kind of okay, but then it's like you get the, and it specifically states in like the season pass, you get the first two pieces of DLC for free. Like, that is not a season pass. A season pass is, in my opinion, should be you get the DLC.
Yeah, right.
Especially I think
well, depends on how much they're planning on. You know, it might be like a cost thing where they're like, okay, we can afford, you know, to give away this much planned DLC, and then based on how well that sells, we can, you know, we can possibly bring out more DLC if it makes, you know, if it makes sense. But
right,
you know, it's not gonna, you know, they don't want to marry themselves to the people that, you know, that buy that season pass up front.
Sure,
they may or may not do more DLC. So I mean, yeah, it kind of makes sense.
Well, I mean, you could just say like, and you get DLC or something, like they could just be vague with their wording, I guess. But also, I think it's maybe the first game I've ever seen where the season pass is actually more expensive than the standard game. Season pass is $20. Mm-hmm. Standard game is $14.99, which is a little bit weird to me.
Oh, so maybe it's going to be some pretty substantial DLC then.
I'm hoping so. Like, the achievements are already in the game. Like, you can already look at the achievements for the two upcoming pieces of DLC. It also comes with the game soundtrack, which I did not think was particularly noteworthy. So, like, it didn't really stick out to me. I could not hum any bars for you right now. But, yeah, so I don't want to leave on such a negative note for this game, because what I should say is that the puzzles in this game are incredibly, incredibly slick, very, 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 very polished. Like, they, I think it's maybe more of a testament to the game's really how enthralled you get in the game's mechanics, that it, the fact that I never, almost never got stuck on a puzzle and I didn't know how to solve it, because I think part of why that happened was because they are so good at, like, just setting up a room for you to you know, set up your weird dimensional Rube Goldberg machine, and just have at it. Just
it was kind of that way with Portal too, though. I mean, I remember the first time playing Portal, I did that in one sitting, and it wasn't, you know, necessarily that it wasn't difficult. It was just intuitive.
Yeah, intuitive. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah, it's I play this in three sittings, five hours. I did a substantial amount of collectible searching. You can go back and beat the, you know, there's a lot of challenges that you can go back and complete. You can collect all the collectibles. You can go back and beat it under a par time. You can go back and beat it in a limited number of shifts of dimensional shifts. Like, you in this puzzle, you can only shift dimensions 10 times or whatever to get the thing or whatever. It doesn't really do anything other than give you a trophy or an achievement if that's your thing. So, but there's, you know, stuff to go back and do if you want it. Or there's like there's also a challenge for going through each level and not dying, which is the still alive achievement that I mentioned. Okay. Oh, and pushing more towards the Portal comparisons, it even has like an ending, like the game ends and the end credits are like literally a song that has been specifically written to talk about the stuff that happened in the game. It is not the same kind of style of music. It is definitely like, it is like a speed punk kind of jokey, hokey kind of song in the end. So maybe that's part of what you might want from the soundtrack. I didn't think it particularly, it felt like they were kind of trying to do the same thing as Portal yet again. You know, I hate to keep bringing up Portal, but the comparisons are so blatant to be made. But I do feel like Kim Swift, like, I feel like when you mentioned earlier the intuitiveness of Portal, I feel like that's Kim Swift's hand in this. I don't feel like the end credits music or like all the story stuff, like the references to science and science juice at some points, like childish version of Portal, I guess. I feel like Kim Swift's hand in this was, you know, making these puzzles that are crazy slick and crazy intuitive and really, really cool and feel good to keep playing. Like, it is one of those games where you just keep wanting to, I constantly found myself saying, like, okay, I'll do one more puzzle and then I'll shut it off and go eat or something like that. And I just kept going and going and going, completely forgetting that I had just promised myself that I would stop playing. So if that sounds like it's worth $15 to you, definitely, definitely give it a shot. John Delancey is always fun. I'm interested to see what they do with the DLC.
Cool.
Yeah, I think that's all I had to say about it.
So it's Portal.
It's not
I'm
Portal.
Kidding.
It's
just kidding.
Like, mechanically, it is not Portal at all, well, except for the platforming kind of stuff.
And the,
like,
portals.
Okay, yeah, when you get the portal gun in level 3, that was a bit of a stretch. But, you know, they pull it off in the end. They make the landing. Actually, yeah, I guess. So yeah, it is, but yeah, maybe, I don't know if there's a demo. Try it out. See if it's your thing. If it's your thing, definitely play it. I think it's worth checking it.
That's very profound.
Well, it's not a very profound game. it is.
No,
fun.
I get it. I just mean, like, if this is the type of game that you want to play, play this game.
That's just it, though. If you like Portal, if you like Portal 2, if you like Cube, you know, you like these physics puzzlers, like, it is definitely one of those. It is not the earth-shattering thing that Portal was. It is super fun. It is super polished. But yeah, that's what I can say about it. I don't think that it will stand the test of time quite the way that something like Portal did. And that's the last time I'm going to say Portal on this podcast, except for that time just there. Fuck it. Yeah, anyway, so I'm sure people are tired of hearing me talk. Dally, if you want to go ahead and pick either you yourself or Mike to talk for a little bit.
Well, how about
take a second?
Well, I'll hop in for a little bit. Then we can we'll eventually make our way back to you to talk Gravity Rush.
Sure.
I've started playing. You know, I'll get right to it, and that's Pocket Planes. So, did any of you guys play Tiny Towers? Either of you guys?
Yes.
This is Nimblebit's next game, Pocket Planes, and it's Tiny Towers in the Sky, and that's essentially all there is to it. No, I'm just kidding. But really, it is Tiny Tower. It's just flying towers. In fact, I think you can actually shuttle a tower from one city to another at one point. You run an airline. You're basically the Howard Hughes of the digital airspace. And you start an airline in one home city, and you unlock another city, and kind of fly between a few different cities, rack up money, buy more planes, unlock more cities as you level up, and go from there. But it's just super addicting. It's just one of those kind of games. And Nimblebit does a great job of this. They did it with Tiny Towers. Is that all the moves are timed, so you send you send out your entire fleet of planes to different locations, and some of them will take 10 minutes to get to their flight, to get to their destination city. Others will take 25 minutes. Some will take 35 minutes, depending on where you're sending them to. And so your phone will constantly be giving you messages that these planes have landed, and your plane is now ready to go be sent to another location and rack up money from either passengers or cargo. And so forth. So you're constantly checking your phone and getting notified and playing your little moves here and there and stuff. But I'm at level 10 right now, and I've opened up the second level of planes, which are bigger planes. I can carry more people on there and go to different cities and stuff, bigger cities. And it's really cool. It's much more in-depth than Tiny Towers was. There's a lot more you could do. It seems like it's a lot easier to gain money and funds in this than it was in Tiny Towers. And it's free, so you really can't beat that. But It's free. No, yeah, it's totally free. I have not spent any money on buying and picking up cash. It's actually very easy in the game to get the Nimble Bucks or whatever they call them.
Oh, man, I hope they really do call them that.
I think they actually are called Nimble Bucks. But okay. It's very easy to get the cash within the game. In fact, it's got this something that they let you do in this that you couldn't do in Tiny Towers, was that as your plane is flying from one location to the next, it actually shows your plane in flight, just kind of shows an animation of your plane going, and every 5 seconds a coin will fly by. So you tap on the coin and you get one in-game coin, which really doesn't
space
amount. Well, no, there's space bucks, and then there's in-game coins. And the Nimble Bucks are what you use to buy planes. The in-game coins are what you use to upgrade your airports and buy new airports. So, but as your plane is flying, a coin will go by every 5 seconds, where it'll be a 10-piece coin, and every so often you'll actually get one of the dollars fly by. So, you can actually hire 2-year-olds to hold your phone for you and tap the dollars and the coins they go by, which is a great way to have them kill time. Oh. And
so does that come with the game? Do the 2-year-olds come with the
yeah,
with your purchase
really,
with your
free download?
It's really
surprising. The 2-year-olds are really good. 3-year-olds are also good. I think once you get past 3, 3.5-year-olds, they tend to lose interest. So really, when you're selecting,
then you got to trade out for a younger model.
Yeah, exactly. You can really only go +1 on the 2-year-old, because then after that it just goes bad. So really,
yeah,
when you're selecting,
you throw your 3-year-olds out. Just put them in the garbage.
Well, that's that $9.99 unlock that you find for Magic the Gathering. It's basically the same thing for Pocket Planes.
Sure.
So
how much is a foil conversion on your 3-year-old?
It really depends on if you want them to work on catalytic converters or if it's an electric engine. What you'll want to do is sit them down and say, listen, stop watching fucking Dora on the goddamn iPhone again, because it's fucking giving me a headache. And I'm going to turn off the goddamn Mickey Mouse and the Muppet movie. Sorry, Muffets. And you're going to sit down. You're going to farm gold pieces for me on a Pocket Plane.
Wait, why is your daughter watching Dora, Mickey Mouse, and the Muppet movie all at the same time?
She does.
Well, his daughter has six eyes. Like,
no. No, no, no. On the TV, it's the Muppet Movie. On the phone, it's Dora and Mickey Mouse on YouTube.
Apparently, she also has the processing power of Brainiac. Like, yeah, how the fuck could she even understand what's happening?
Oh, she understands everything. It's bizarre. I think it is Pocket Planes that has learned her these things. Anyway, so.
This is what happens when you bury your sister kids. Like your kids are
kids are
born with like crazy mental powers.
They do have these little.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah, I'll punch you next time I see you. They do have these what they're calling flight crews now, which is I'm part of the Polygon flight crew, and. You basically log in your flight crew name, and then they give you these things called global events, and your goal is with your flight crew to rack up the most amount of money within a set period of time, and to do so by basically flying to wherever they tell you to fly and that kind of stuff. So it's the only prizes are you get if you land in the top 10. Then you get $50 in the game. If you land in the top 100, you get 20 in-game bucks. So actually, it's kind of cool. It forces you to get to help your team get prizes and stuff. So it's good. It's a lot of fun.
Okay.
So it's Pocket Planes.
I have kind of just one comment about it, which is that I would just like to apologize to Mrs. Domofsky. I'm sure she's a very lovely woman, and I meant nothing. Well, I meant nothing about
her. Her name is Domofsky by birth as well, so it's kind of.
So it's Mrs. Domofsky. Domofsky.
Domofsky Square. No, I'm just kidding.
It's like Mario. Mario.
Mario. Mario.
Mario. The greatest canonical contribution that movie ever made.
So that's Pocket Planes. I've also been playing another portable game. I just reviewed Order Up for the 3DS. So this is the first full retail game to be offered for download on 3DS. So there is a boxed version of this game. It doesn't release till the end of August. So they sent out the digital one first for some reason. It's $9.99, and it's kind of a mix between. Like a restaurant tycoon game and Cooking Mama, and so essentially you kind of start off as a small town fry chef, and you have to learn just some basic cooking maneuvers. So it's not like 50,000 things at once, and it doesn't really go in depth and kind of it doesn't make you do wacky maneuvers with the stylus and shit. But there's enough in there, and you can purchase spices and you know add your own. Somewhat twist to the foods. But then there's the whole tycoon portion of it, which is building up your restaurant and then buying other restaurants. And then you can hire staff to help you out. And there's a ninja that can kind of coerce people to buy more expensive dishes and give you more tips and stuff. So
wait, what?
Yeah, you can hire a ninja in the game to do that. The characters are actually really, really well designed. They look like little beans with like stick hands and stick legs.
That's how I like my characters to look.
Exactly. But they're super stylized, which works well. This game was actually released 4 years ago on the Wii, 2008. And then
Dally, right now you've got me in such a fucking emotional roller coaster. Like, yeah. I'm gonna be honest with you. I had already forgotten the name of your dumb game, but then when you got to ninjas, you had me right back in. But then you had to mention that it's a 4-year-old fucking Wii game.
So like, here it is. So it's a 4-year-old Wii game. They just released it in March for the PS3. It's move enabled and in high def. Lottie fucking die. It's the same game. I think they made a few additions. And they've adjusted the music and stuff. They released it for the PS3, and then it just released for iOS a little while back, like a month ago or so. And now for the 3DS. And I think it's coming out for Vita as well.
I don't know. I don't know if I want these secondhand games.
So listen. Like, so here's what I'm going to say. Do not play this game on any of the consoles. Don't. Because it's not a console style. These games are fantastic for portables. Cooking games just don't. mechanic wise, maybe they're fun for like quick mini games or whatever, but not a full game that's just made up of cooking. It's not fun. They're great.
Well,
on...
Deli, to be fair, Deli, when this comes out on the Wii U, should we wait to see the Wii U version, see the gamepad support, and see what it really adds to the experience of threatening customers with ninja swords?
You can actually threaten customers, which is kind of cool, and you can hire a helper to cook food for you while you're doing certain tasks and stuff.
Is the helper any kind of weird genre stereotype?
They have a fat guy, and they have a tall Norwegian, tall blonde Swedish guy.
I can tell you some stereotypes about tall Norwegians.
but that's
racist,
just factual.
Factors. Yeah, they're all factual. No, so it this is a 4-year-old game. It got kind of passed up on the Wii. It was actually rated really well. It has a pretty high Metacritic score, in the high 8s. And it's done by such.
Dally trying to appeal to authority because he brought in a 4-year-old fucking game.
Yeah, and so they obviously added shit to it. I mean, it's a 4-year-old game. It's just like any other fucking game out there that they re-release on consoles and portables over and over again. I mean, they re-released year-old, 2-year-old, 3-year-old games on. They just re-released Metal Gear Solid HD on the PlayStation Vita. The games are 10 years old, I think, right? There's initially PlayStation 2 1.
Metal Gear Solid 2, I think, is actually,
So it's the same thing. It's just better visuals. Yeah, this is actually better visuals than the Wii version. But again, I'm going to say this. Let me leave it at this. Just like all those other remakes, this is a remake. This is a 4-year-old game. It is not for consoles. On a portable device, a 3DS, a DS, iOS, Vita, it actually fits really well because it you only want to play this for short periods at a time. It's great when you're going to the toilet, taking a dump. You could run a day's worth of food. Yeah, that's a great combination. Food and taking a shit, that works really well.
Garbage in, garbage out.
The way the game is set up is in days. So you do a day's worth of food, and so you run a bunch of tables, you purchase spices, you help customers, rake in the dough, and then your day is over, and then the next day starts. So, and the days usually last 5 to 10 minutes at most, which means again, really nice kind of quick pick up and play and put it aside type of stuff. Works great on portable devices, and it's actually kind of fun because of the whole sim thing and all that kind of stuff. But if this was the first time this game was released, I would have rated it 4 out of 5 stars because it would have been a brand new game. This is a 4-year-old game, and I always find it impossible to rate games higher that have been released. It doesn't matter if you add HD graphics, something, it's still the same exact game from however many years ago. And so with good conscience, I couldn't rate it any higher. Also knowing that the iOS version is free. So the iOS version is free. This is $9.99. So I think that's where the issue, in the back of my mind, I could play the 3DS version and it's actually somewhat better than the iOS version just because you're separating the upper and lower screen. So all your actions are in the lower screen. You can see what's going on the upper screen and your finger's not covering up anything. But at the same time, it's $9.99 and the iOS version is free.
But that's probably a limitation of the marketplace, though. I mean, I'm willing to bet that Nintendo's got rules in place.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know, and I couldn't really fault a game for... where it's released.
I mean, the iOS version has in-app purchases, and that's how they're making all their money. So you get the game for free, and you can buy extra restaurants, you can buy extra ingredients, and that kind of stuff. That's how they make their money. Nintendo, to this point, they haven't allowed that. I think now with the whole DLC thing, who knows if they'll start doing that kind of stuff. I mean, it hasn't worked for any other...
Welcome to 2004,
yeah, exactly.
Nintendo.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same point, at least they're... I mean, the game is actually fun. So for people that have it, that have a 3DS, they're looking for something, it's actually really interesting. Download it. If you're going to buy it for the 3DS, download it now because the game's going to be $29.99 when you buy the actual cartridge version. Fuck that shit. That's one.
Okay, so listeners, I just want to point out, just some inside baseball here. My secret hidden agenda on every episode of the side quest is that anytime Dally comes in with like a just bright eyed and like optimistic about any game, it's just by the time he's done talking about it, I want to worn him down so much that he hates the fucking game that he has brought. And I feel like I've maybe been a little bit too successful, and
bad. This game, it's actually a fun game. This is the best way to describe this game. This is what I labeled it as in my review of it. It's a great vacation game. You're gonna play it once for 10 minutes. You're gonna probably play it again a week later for 10 minutes. Play it again a week later for 10 minutes. If you're on vacation and like waiting in the airport for 10 minutes or on the plane for 10, you're not gonna play that. You're not gonna do like marathon sittings this game because it does get really. All the cooking games are really repetitive. Just it's like Jetpack Joyride. You're not going to play that game over and over again for like 6 hours straight, right? It's just kind of those set mechanics. So this is just
jump in, jump out. It's portable.
And for that reason, it checks all the boxes, hits the mark. But because it's a 4-year-old game, I couldn't go any higher than three.
Makes
out of
the free
five.
Throw.
Makes the free throw. Gets the goal.
Nothing but
the
net.
Hat trick. It gets the alley oop.
Hits the alley oop. And America wins.
The target. Splits the arrow.
Yeah, so it's actually fun. It's not gonna blow your mind, but it's a great vacation game. Pick it up on iOS. Don't get it for 3DS because the iOS version is free. It's like knowing now that any multi-platform game that comes out for the Vita or the 3DS is gonna be free or really damn cheap on iOS. It's almost like just buy the first party titles on either of those two platforms and get all the third party titles on iOS. I'm kind of at that point.
Tabletop Tanks has it right, man. Tabletop Tanks, Vita game for $2.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they have those for 3DS too. They have like the really cheap games, but those games will probably all end up on iOS at some point for nothing.
I just wanted to go on to a spiel about how Vita and 3DS games are too fucking expensive.
They're not actually, but, surprisingly.
No. Some of them are, but
some of them are.
But actually, like, kind of what you're talking about just kind of brought to my attention just kind of a very kind of an interesting thing that, like, you mentioned Besties and you mentioned like the VS, the 3DS, and the Vita and the iPad and all this stuff, and it kind of got me thinking about something that I was thinking about earlier today that I wanted to bring up during the podcast, which was that I am increasingly over the tablets and things as a gaming portal. Because of something that I mentioned on Besties again last Friday, which was that like there is not a ton of variety on the iPad and stuff like that. Like there are games like this in droves, like these kind of arcadey, pick them up, drop them, you know, play them kind of things like you would want. But like, why are there no things like Metroid? Kind of type games, like why are there no kind of
there are
not a lot, and they're and none of them are as good as like you would get on like a 3DS or a Vita, because you don't have the buttons, and I don't want my stupid like messy hands on the screen, you know, rubbing up on like some like lady's character animation if she
stop talking like that, man. I'm getting a boner.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's occupational hazard, Mike. Like,
that's true.
You signed up for this. You knew the risks.
Risks, more like incentives.
Like so like if I'm playing you see Resident Evil Revelations on the 3DS, which is not, you know, a great video game, you know, by any stretch, but like if I played that on my iPad, like I would have my hands all rubbing up on the screen and stuff. Yep. So if I've got to like tilt the lady character, I've got like my thumb running over her butt or something like that. I don't want to feel like a freak either. Like, and I have just, you know, with games like Gravity Rush and stuff like that coming out, I have found myself increasingly drawn towards handhelds in a way that I haven't been in decades, and I feel good about that. I feel good. Like, I feel good that I can play a game like Magic the Gathering and it feels better on iPad than it probably would on any other system because it feels meant for that system. But I also like having my my Vita and my 3DS.
Yep.
Yeah, I like having my dedicated system. Yeah. So
and you I and feel I, like you and I synergy. Have yeah, totally. And you and I have made the same point that, I mean, there was like this big push. A lot of analysts and there's a lot of media, gaming media, that says Nintendo's stupid. They should just release their games on iOS and make money. Really? You think Nintendo wants to make shitty versions of Mario Brothers on iOS? Hell no.
God, yeah.
That would be horrible. Nintendo games are... If Nintendo does one thing right, even at their classic games, is that every pixel is like super important real estate on their games, right? So in the original Mario Brothers, there were points where you had to hang off the ledge with a toe on in World 8-1 just to make sure you got across the fucking ledge. You can't do that with the iPad. What you're gonna use a virtual keypad and a virtual D-pad and try to, it just doesn't work.
Are you gonna tap there and hope that your character moves to the spot that you want him to and not like a centimeter to the left?
No, that's the other thing that I'm not sold on smart glass technology. I actually this is where the Wii U I definitely think has an advantage over Microsoft. Smart glass is just touch based stuff. So you're gonna be You can scribble your play, but you're not going to actually be able to control. And Mike, you made a really good point when we were at E3 talking about this stuff. Is like, and I think you detailed it one of your posts. It's like, it's great. I'm gonna put when it's time to make my Madden play, I'm gonna select my move with my controller, put it down, turn around, pick up the iPad, open up the app. Select the move, make the move, hit the enter, put that down, pick my controller up again, wave at the Kinect, get things moving, and then play. It's like,
Well, and I was talking to, I think it was John Perry about this, about how, like, they were saying, it's kind of a stab at Nintendo. It's like, well, no, it's not, because the tablet doesn't have any buttons.
Right,
and, buttons are necessary. And what they've kind of done is they're marrying those two, those two things. And take it or leave it. But the Wii U makes that feature a necessity. You basically have to use it to play the Wii U. I mean, it's included with the system. Mm-hmm. But with something Smart Glass, it requires setup. And just that alone, even if it's an easy setup, it means that people aren't going to do it.
Right. if it's a stab at anyone, it's a stab at Apple saying,
exactly.
You can do this too. Also, the word stab does not really apply, because the word stab implies some kind of finesse. This is more of a flail, like a horrible gurgling flail at Apple.
It'd be cool. It seems like it'd be cool for just from an AirPlay standpoint. Being able to just to start a movie in one place, watch it somewhere else. I mean, I can already do that shit with Netflix, but
remember this: you won't be able to do that with Xbox games. You won't be able to say, "Hey, I want to play my Xbox game on the 360." Oh, someone's got to watch TV. I'm just going to AirPlay it over to my iPad. No, I can't AirPlay it over to my iPad because it doesn't function that way with the Xbox. It's an augmentation. It's an addition.
And they've got all these weird features that they added, you can look at your iPad and get IMDb stats about the movie. It's nobody's gonna fucking do that. They're watching a movie. Guys,
I really want to understand what Vincent D'Onofrio did that was really important to this movie.
I just want to watch everything Vince Vaughn has ever been in. Is that so wrong?
Oh man, Rachel McAdams, this is her third movie. Did you guys know that? I didn't.
No, this was her third movie that she released in 2011. Now you know the rest. Back to your kind of comment there, Steven. I completely agree with you. It's a very different gaming experience than what you'd find on a portable. And when people say, the 3DS, Vita, they don't stand a chance against Apple. Yeah, they do, because it is a very different gaming experience. Apple doesn't have fucking buttons on there. Android doesn't have buttons. Windows Phone doesn't have buttons. You need buttons to make a true portable gaming experience.
There's there's this idea that everybody social games, social and casual games are big right now. And so people I think are kind of overestimating how big. When they said there's some people found bed bugs in their hotel room, and then everybody's like, oh, there's bed bugs in every hotel room. Well, maybe it's not that big of a deal.
That's an amazing comparison, because it's the same. Yeah, it's the media kind of creating this sort of false image to kind of say like, hey, like, look at this. We can create an we want to create a worldwide or a national at least event that we can keep talking about because we ain't got shit to talk about that anybody cares about anymore. So it's like, hey, swine flu is gonna kill us all. Well, no, because almost nobody's got it, and swine flu is actually like not as bad for you as regular flu, which is actually killing people, but does not sell newspapers or, you know, broadcast time. I guess nobody's buying newspapers anyway, but you know, shit like that. And I think the kind of the thing that's happening with, at least on a personal level, just with me right now, and this is what I thought about today, is that what's happening with me with the iPad is that is kind of the same thing that happened with America with the Wii, whereas like the Wii was taking over. It was like, oh my God, like Wii Sports, Wii Bowling, all these things are like sell like hot. We're gonna sell like hotcakes forever and ever, and it's never gonna stop. But then it stops, and I realized, oh,
it dead stopped.
I don't want to do that forever. Like I want. You know, that was fun. We had our time together. iOS games, like we had our fun. You know, we'll always have Paris, but like I'm gonna go back and marry. I'm gonna marry the brunette that is my Vita.
that may be the one advantage. That may be the one advantage that Nintendo ends up having with this Wii U is that that Pro controller is essentially turns that Wii U into a 360.
God, it looks so dumb though.
I had a little bit like I only played it at E3 like with a Pro controller for maybe 2 seconds, but those buttons, why are they in the wrong spot? Like put it like
it takes getting used to. Yeah, totally.
It was almost a stretch for me.
You know what's funny is the original classic controller Pro that Nintendo created had the sticks both down low. I mean, it was essentially an actual cross between a PS3 and a 360 controller, and it was fairly comfortable too. Both analog sticks
were like a cross between PS3 and SNES.
Yeah, that's true. So, but they were in the right spot, and it was—I mean, it functioned like what you'd expect. And then they move them to this top location, which is kind of weird to me. I mean, it'll take getting used to, just like any other controller that comes out on the market. But
did you guys have like a moment at E3? Did anybody have like a moment, or did you see anybody who had the moment where everybody was like, PlayStation All Stars, you know, E3 is coming up, PlayStation All Stars, they're just copying Nintendo, but not quite, because they got, that's how they differentiate. But we all know the truth. And then like Nintendo unveils the Pro controller. It's just like, Nintendo's doing it too, huh?
Yeah, no, that's actually what I said in my post about PlayStation All-Stars is this is like the E3 where everybody just copies everybody.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
You know, they did the PlayStation All-Stars. There was the 360 Wii U Pro controller. And then there was also Smart Glass. So like everybody had an issue where they were doing that.
Totally. Yeah, it's Smart Glass to me, it seems like it's copying more like – almost more like copying the Vita. Like they're saying like, we don't have a system of our own that cross connects with our thing. So we like the Vita does. I don't think because
it doesn't even copy the Vita. Cause the Vita has buttons. The Vita,
I'm talking from like from a software perspective, like not from the hardware necessarily, but just like, just saying like, hey, we want companion apps. Like, but we don't want, like, with the Wii U, it's like,
it's integrated.
Yeah. It is one game, and you do extra stuff with it. It is a peripheral for your game. But this is, like, separate sort of side stuff in the cloud. But like you said, Vita has buttons. Like, what's up?
Yep, what's up? What's up, Microsoft? What you gonna do?
It's there's ways that you can use Smart Glass correctly. Like, there are cool things to be done with it. Just I think they're approaching it from the standpoint of like, oh, we're gonna, you know, try and have this like the same game integration that you're seeing on the other systems, and it's like, well, maybe don't look at it that way because you don't have the system for it.
Well, yeah, you literally do not have a system for it. that's kind of the other thing too, is that both other divisions both other sides have like a whole other division dedicated to having things in your hands, whereas Microsoft's like, hey guys, Windows Phone 7, right? Zunes?
Surface.
No?
Surface.
God. Surface.
And that's the other thing, too, is that, like, Windows...
Let's see if this one works.
Yeah.
Windows 8 and, like, you know, Windows Phone 8, actually, like, I see a lot of promise there. It just remains to be seen whether or not they're gonna...
Oh, I was listening to the latest...
Do it correct.
This is gonna go on a complete tangent from what we were talking about, but...
Well, this is already...
Talking about was a tangent. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was a tangent from Pocket Planes and from Order Up. I was listening to This Week in Tech talk about the Windows 8 tablet, the Surface tablet. And when Microsoft announced it, I kind of dogged it a little bit, saying, "Yeah, haha." I was, the first like 10 minutes is me joking around about the whole iPad thing, and then I actually started thinking, "This could be a really cool device. This could replace the way Microsoft is positioning it, at least from their conference, was this is going to replace your PC, your potentially replace your Windows 8 laptop. You won't need a laptop because you'll have a tablet with this." With this cover, with the keypad in it, and
they've been trying to do that for years. But, though.
So here's the thing: so the Surface comes in two flavors. It comes in the RT, the Windows 8 RT, which isn't true Windows 8. It's actually like a really dumbed down version that only runs off of the App Store. And then it comes in the I think it's called the Microsoft Surface Pro for Windows 8 or for Windows 8 Intel or something like that, which allows installation of some PC titles but not all, and functions off the Windows 8 App Store instead of the Windows Phone App Store, which is what the RT version functions off of. So there's like both the Surface tablets they showed, though they look the same, were completely different. And I have a strong feeling they're both going to fail because the story behind them is just like it was rushed so quickly. Google has their I.O. conference this week, I think starting tomorrow, and they're announcing all the Android tablet stuff. And Google has a pretty solid story when it comes to their Android tablet. And Microsoft doesn't have a story right now at all for their tablet. So I think that's why their hand was forced. And so that Surface, where I was super excited at the beginning of last week, thinking this will be my home PC, the Windows 8 tablet. Nope, nada. It's going to be $1,000 for one, the Windows, I guess the professional one, which actually gets you like somewhat real functionality, is $1,000. It's probably going to be clocking in at around $1,000, which puts it right.
Kidding me?
Which puts it right at that MacBook Air. And I'd much rather have a MacBook Air than a Windows R8 tablet, which can't run everything. And so at that point, it's like, ooh, what are you going to do?
You got it. Hey, where's that coming from? Have they like
– That was – no, that was all the folks that
price,
were –
Or is that
no,
just like
– They're being coy on price. They haven't mentioned the price, but that's what kind of let the analysts and the folks on Twit were saying, that they think it's going to clock in. I mean, if it's $800 or $900, then it falls into that Apple – MacBook Air territory, because you can get
it.
A MacBook
has
Air right
to
now
compete on price with the iPad. Does. It has to.
Yep. So we'll see. I mean, I'm unsold from Surface now. I might consider just going back to a laptop, but we'll see.
Well, just hold off on it and see how it plays out. Because like these things are never things that you want to jump in on right away.
Sure.
You want to see how it's supported. That's what's going to make or break any kind of hardware, is how it's supported.
And that's why I was very trigger happy to purchase the MacBook Pro with the Retina display. And then I thought, I want to see one of these in person. So I actually went to Best Buy, and I'm looking at the MacBook Pros, and I'm thinking, wow, this screen really is phenomenal. And the guy next to me is like, oh, you should see the MacBook Pro with Retina display. That screen's even better. I'm like, wait, what? He's like, yeah, come around the corner over here. And so they actually had the MacBook Pro with Retina display around the corner, not sitting next to the MacBook Pros with the regular display. I couldn't tell enough of the difference, because there's no apps that utilize the Retina display right now.
Right.
There's like two or three. There's very few. So there's nothing that utilizes it. And so I'm definitely holding off on the Retina display MacBooks until further down the line, when the processor power and the graphics card catches up to the strength of that Retina display. So anyways, let's talk more about some more games. Mike, I'm interested in hearing what you have been playing.
I have been playing a crap ton of Driver. Like every second that I get. San Fran. No, Driver 1 on the PS1.
Drive 3-er?
Yeah. No, God. Parallel Lines, actually. let's just name all the Driver games and just keep that joke going.
Driver 2, Driver.
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh, God. It's really fun as a driving game, which is kind of cool. Like, you know, didn't they try and do like a get out of the car kind of thing for other drivers, where you actually like...
Oh. Yeah, you.
Which one was that?
Well, I think in Driver 3 and Driver Parallel Lines, you literally just like got out of the car as a dude and like walked around and
hopped into other cars, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they did like they did probably like the coolest thing. Like when they first showed the game and they're like, oh, you can shift, which is, you know, where you jump out of your car and then you like you just pick another car on the road and you're instantly that driver. It was the stupidest thing in the world, you know, like you know, it seemed like it until they were like, oh, well, you know, okay, you can only do this because you're in a coma and it's all in your mind. And it's like, and somehow that makes it okay. And I don't know why, but I accept it because of that. But
coma powers.
But it has so many like
video games.
Yeah, it has so many cool like implications because of that. Like, you know, if you're driving, you know, say you're driving to a location and you miss your turn, well, fuck it, I'll just take a car that's going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about it. Or like, you know, if you're racing somebody, you know, and it's like, oh, you know, I'm having a hard time beating this guy; he's too fast. Well, I'll just take possession of a guy going the opposite direction and crash into him and kill him, and then you know we'll see who wins that race.
Spoilers, it's me.
Yeah. No, it's spoilers, exactly. But it's, you know, it's really cool, but like the story is actually kind of interesting because if once you start, you know, you realize, you know, obviously he gets in a car accident towards the beginning and he gets put into a coma and then all this stuff is basically a coma dream that he's having. But there's like little like touches that they throw in there, where like, you know, when you shift, basically you get like an overview of the city. You kind of like float up above your car, like near death experience style. But one of the things that I didn't notice until a little while later is like just kind of faintly you can hear the beeping of the heart monitor, like when you jump out. And they throw in like all sorts of little touches like that. Like every once in a while, you'll hear like there's one point where you're comatose body is being taken somewhere in an ambulance, and over your radio you hear like the ambulance driver's radio, like, so there's like all these little like outside influences. Oh. That's like that it's really subtle, like they don't do it kind of like ham-fisted where he's like, oh, what was that, you know, like looking at his radio and things. I mean, he notices it every once in a while, but it
reminds me a lot of Life on Mars, if you ever watched either the American version or the British version, which was a very, very similar concept. It was just like about a cop who got put into a coma or got hit by a car and got put into a coma. And when he was within it, he got transported to like the 70s or something. But he was still hearing – every once in a while he would hear like doctors talking over him like through radios or televisions and stuff like that, trying to tell him – or trying to talk to like his family members and stuff like that. And I kind of dig that idea.
Right. And it's like, I've heard that the game, I'm only maybe halfway through it. And I've heard that the game kind of like really, really kind of jumps the shark with that, with the whole like shifting, with the shifting aspect of the game. And I'm really actually looking forward to it. Cause you know, some of the things that they do, like it starts to get really trippy. Like there's a point in the game where like, everything freezes and you have to like follow this ambulance through the city, and there's no real explanation for it. It's just all of a sudden like the entire city is frozen except for this ambulance, and you got to follow it around. The story itself is pretty cool, but the driving aspect of it is really fun as well. They did a really good job of making the driving exciting, which is kind of a hard thing to do. Because you either really like you kind of water down the game in order to make, you know, the drifts really easy to do, or you know, you make it so that there's not much traffic on the road in order to try and like make it seem more exciting. And somehow they've managed to not do that. The traffic is actually has kind of like a density that you would expect driving around a major city, you know, like the driving actually feels realistic without actually being realistic, so that it's still fun to play. And then they come up with a bunch of different bunch of interesting ways to like use that driving engine with in the missions that you do. Like there was one that I was actually just doing now when you guys were talking about that that lame airplane game or whatever, where you
dumb iOS game.
Yeah. Like there's
sorry, Dally.
There's trucks around the city that have that have truck bombs strapped underneath. And what you've got to do is you got to shift into fast and low cars. And then, like, Fast and the Furious style, you got to drive underneath these trucks and, like, maintain your speed while you're disarming the bomb.
I totally thought that was going a different direction. I thought this is going to be, like, Speed. Like, you had to jump inside of the trucks with the
No, they have that too. Don't
you
worry. That's there. They actually use that a few different times. There's one where it's like, actually it's cool because, like, rather than just say, okay, now there's this truck that has a bomb underneath it and you have to go disarm it, they have a mission where it's like where you start in the truck and the guy's radioing, he's like, okay, you need to get on the freeway. There's a bomb. And after he gets off the phone, John Tanner, the guy you play as, is like, oh, you know, I have to get this truck somewhere safe, and tells his passenger, he's like, somebody else will take care of the bomb. Don't worry. And then he drives to, like, a secluded location. Then you shift into another car, and then you drive the car in to disarm the bomb. It's right. Really cool how they have you actually playing multiple parts in one mission.
So it's like sort of dream logic to him, though, right?
Like, exactly. Yeah. It's completely dream logic. It's almost like, you know, you're in a dream and you know you're in a dream. He doesn't know, though. That's the thing, is he just thinks that he's got magical powers.
Right. Yeah. Like dream logic. Like I'm saying, like, he doesn't think any of this is weird, even though it's totally fucking weird.
Exactly.
Because it's his dream. So, but you are observing it as an outsider, so you know it's fucking weird, and so you're waiting for him to figure out that it's fucking weird.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's brilliant. The sad thing to me is that they'll never be able to do this again.
That's exactly what I was. I had that.
You know,
I had that question all lined up.
They've come up with this, you know, with this really, like, obscure, like, weird explanation for why he's able to do this. And I don't really know how you could ever use the same mechanic again, because you would have to come up with another explanation for it.
Well, and fuck, Life on Mars had a sequel where they just did the exact same fucking thing. So why not?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. Part of me feels like this is like, you know, Driver had, it's a comeback, but also it's a farewell at the same time.
Yeah,
you know,
this is the final song for Driver.
When it first came out, and then it was, like, shitty for years and years and years. And then it came out, and it was like, then, you know, San Francisco came out, and it's really good. But that's probably it for Driver.
Just do the George Costanza walk out of the, like, you tell a good one,
drops
walk
mic
out of the room, and just never, you never acknowledge the fact that you ever did anything in the first place, because you just dropped what you did, and you did it well. But
yeah, they're gonna probably leave on a high note, but that's fine. I
hope so.
Haven't gotten into the multiplayer yet. I played the demo before it came out on XBLA, not XBLA, on Xbox. And you know, and that was pretty fun. You know, they kind of use those same, like, shift mechanics, and I don't remember anything about it because I haven't played that for a long time, so I don't really have much to say, but it's pretty good. It was on sale. It'll probably be on sale again during the Steam sale when that starts next weekish.
Yeah, so. Thursday, right?
Thursday. Yeah, actually. So, yeah, it's sneaking up on me. But yeah, very
soon. In your wish list, kids.
It's one of those, like, it's a must have in your collection, especially if you can get it for under $10. Ooh, seriously.
I just finished installing it. So
we need to play multiplayer, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I wish Eric was on this podcast. I feel like you and him, like, Eric is the fucking, like, messiah of Driver.
He plays that
nonstop. That game. He loves that fucking game, though. He will talk that shit up to no end. He's the Peter Molyneux. He is what Peter Molyneux is to everything Peter Molyneux does to Driver San Francisco.
You will love your car.
Imagine a man caught in a coma, driving to save his own mind.
His name is Milo.
God, I need to see if there's a Milo mod for Driver now.
What else have you been playing there?
Oh, can I say one other thing about Driver?
Yeah.
Uses Ubisoft shitty DRM.
Yeah.
God, awesome. I tried to play it the other night, and their servers were down. Okay, that's all.
And it's also worth mentioning that you did not buy it from Ubisoft. You bought it from Steam.
I bought it from Steam.
Oh, and it still requires you?
Steam is DRM. Okay, I open up Steam, which is essentially a launcher for my games. I launch Driver, and then Driver launches a launcher from which I can launch Driver.
Fuck you, Ubisoft.
Get out of here. Get out of my house. You're lucky your game's good.
What was I... I feel like I was going to ask something else about the game, but I've already... Driver. Awesome. I'm going to play it with you. We'll get some game time going here. So, Jally?
Yeah. So,
why don't you take the reins?
All right. Mike, what else have you been playing? I'm just going to circle it right back to Mike.
I have been playing Eve.
Oh, fuck me.
So we're not going to really talk about that because there's not much else to say. Spaceships.
Yeah. Oh, wait. No. It's a perfect segue for Steve's shitty Eve Online segment on the side quest part of the show.
Hey. Like I said, there's nothing to say about it.
No. They've released a new patch that changes the lighting models on the Minmitar ship. So about 1/4 of the ships in EVE Online now all look much, much, much better. They all have new models, so they look different now, and they're going to roll out more. You know, they're going to roll out new ship designs for all the different factions in the coming weeks. They also changed the way the Drake looks, which is one of the most popular ships in the game. So that looks different now, and looks real neat and cool. Yeah, your Drake will look different the next time you jump in.
What about my Rifter? Does that look different?
Yep, that's a Minotaur ship.
Oh, shit. So, like, the two ships that I fly look different. Now I'm excited about it.
Yeah, except for the Noctis, though. Not your Noctis.
My Noctis already looks dope.
Yeah, but the Noctis is only, like, a year old,
you know what?
Too,
my Noctis, I think I got a little rash on it. So I'm still trying to figure out what to do,
Dally, is you want to walk outside and you want to break off an icicle and rub it on your Noctis.
Well, the thing is, Dally, you really got to watch out which wormholes you're sticking your Noctis into. You got to really make sure that you're only sticking it into wormholes that you trust.
That's true. It's all about the Tardeye, is what it is.
Uh-huh. Right. But plus, you live in Detroit, so like the average number of people with trouble with their Noctis is much greater in that part.
Mm-hmm.
Of the country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So EVE Online is great. So I think is that all you had, Mike? Because if it is, I'm not talking about
I guess the only other thing that I've been doing is playing. I got the Dolphin emulator up and running.
Ooh, yeah. Tell me about this.
It's so pretty, but it's so finicky at the same time.
Before you go on any further. The Dolphin thing is legal, yeah?
It's completely, entirely, 100% legal. Well,
I was just wondering, because we're talking about it on this show.
Yeah, no. I've only played games that I own on it, and I know that's like the same bullshit that everybody says, but I'm actually being 100% true. Well, my roommate owns them. So that's where I've been getting my disc images.
Your roommate is in New York, though.
Yeah, my
You don't know his name.
I don't like to call him my roommate. I more like to call him my world mate.
Soulmate.
We share this earth together, and that's, you know, that makes us connected in some way.
Right.
And therefore,
but
his
technically, Mike, we
are
we share this world with. We share this world with 6 billion people, Mike. So, like,
yeah, I saw that a lot of shit.
Logic. Actually, we can use everybody's all those 6 billion people shit. Like, just hop on over to Jay Leno's house and go borrow a car.
The joke to me that I was making.
I know isn't he Michael Bay's like son or nephew or something? Pirate. I
think in a way.
Name. Yeah.
No, Pirate but Bay. Yeah, it's all.
No, I got it.
Mate, the one who
get
lives
it?
In the
get
lives
it?
At the same address in the same spot. But yeah, I mean, you can run your Wii games in HD if you've got a machine beefy enough to do it.
If you have a machine beefy enough to play a Wii game, you can have it.
No, as
you can just take
forget
it.
What the
just
number is, it. But it's something like a machine. In order to emulate a machine, it has the machine that you're emulating it on has to be something like 4 times as powerful. There's some metric like that it has
4 times as powerful as a Wii is still pretty, still a pretty funny metric.
Son of a bitch.
Which is, what is that like 8 GameCube?
Like I said, it runs fine, and like in HD, it looks really good until like, you know, the weird little graphical glitches start happening and things like that. But the emulator has NetPlay, so you can basically simulate couch co-op, which means that the online functionality of the Dolphin emulator is automatically better than the online functionality of the Wii.
Do they have this for Mac by any chance?
They do, but make sure.
How much you want to bet it's way broken?
You've got a pretty old MacBook, don't you?
Yeah,
it's probably not going to run very well.
Oh yeah, Mister, I can't run Diablo at max settings.
Yeah, exactly. If you got to run Diablo on 100% low, you're not going to be able to run the Wii emulator. It's like I said, it does require a beefy machine, but it's cool. Like I played Mario Galaxy in not in 1080p because my monitor's only 1980 by 1050, but it's like I played that in 720 and it looks great. And I'm actually there's the nice thing about it too is that you can find high resolution texture packs for these games that people have made, and there's like ways to plug them in through the emulator, which I haven't found one or tried to use one yet, but I've done it for like N64 games and it makes them look really good.
What do you do for controls?
I've got a wireless adapter for my 360 controller.
Okay.
Like the Microsoft brand one.
I was curious if you were like using somehow jury rigging like a Wiimote or something.
You can actually easily do that because it's just Bluetooth, the Wiimote. So if you've got a Bluetooth adapter, you can just connect it up and then you can just get like a wireless sensor bar. Or I've seen videos on the internet of some people using candles, which is so janky. But yeah, I mean, there's easy ways to do that. The game has support, or the emulator itself has support for the Wiimote and all the accelerometers and everything. So, I mean, you basically can make this into a Wii. It's cool. I tried that, and I tried Super Smash Brothers in HD. It was kind of hard for me to get Mario Galaxy 2 running at a decent speed. Like, the frame rate was smooth, but the actual game itself was slowed down to keep up with the frame rate. So that was kind of an issue.
What? I'm just trying to wrap my head around all this magical candy land that you have unlocked for me. What about like things that are specifically motion control? Like, what if it's like you need to like waggle to do this? Does that just get mapped to a button on the 360 controller?
You can actually map it to a button. Yes. So like, you know, if you want like to shake it or something like that. Like originally, I was playing before I found my wireless adapter. I was playing New Super Mario Brothers with my keyboard, and that works fine. Except for, you know, if you've got that hat that has the propeller on it, you have to shake the Wiimote in order to fly up. So I just mapped that to the space bar, which is kind of takes a little bit of the magic out of it. But you know, whatever.
Well, whatever. What magic is there in waggle?
The first time, I'll have you know, the first time that I waggled, I saw fireworks.
Blood came out.
a little blood. I was never the same again. But
cool.
It's pretty sweet. So it's worth doing if you've got a bunch of games sitting around that you can legally use.
You can lay claim to these games.
Don't pirate games, kids. It's too late for me, but it's not too late for you.
Well, you know what's great is I can. So here's my issue is that. Throughout the day, I don't have access to my television until about 10 or 11 at night when my daughter's finally hits the hay and my wife stops watching TV. So
your 2-year-old daughter stays up till 10 or 11 at night?
She stays up till 9, but then my wife watches till about 10 or 11. And then after that,
dad.
No. She doesn't really watch TV. She just needs the TV on into her station. So if she sees something, you know, if she's walking past the room, it has to be on fucking Mickey Mouse or Dora or something. If I had a device where I could play these games in high def, but not necessarily be tied to my TV, so I can still play these, I think that would be perfect. So I think, and I don't know of anything coming out this year, so I'll probably just stick to my laptop and Dolphin emulator.
You can
actually, man, here's a question that we have never asked anybody, and I don't know the answer to this. For the with the Wii U gamepad having the sensor bar on there, could you play Wii games through your Wii U stream to the gamepad and just use the sensor bar there?
I'm not a Nintendo engineer.
I don't understand how that's going to work, though, because then what you're doing is you're propping it up on a surface so that you can stand back from it and play motion control games. That's not
well,
good.
Well, no, I'm thinking for like Xenoblade or whatever. I mean, you know, I think that could be kind of cool being able to play your, you know what I'm saying? Because there's definitely games that you can all you need is just a pointer for.
Speaking of games that look phenomenal in HD, Xenoblade Chronicles. Oh my god!
Really?
Yeah. That game looks.
Well, that game looks good. Not
it looks
in
good
HD.
By itself, but yeah.
I heard the opposite. Heard the game looks like poo poo, in regular.
You heard what?
I heard the game looks like shit, even for a Wii game.
No. It looks well. What I've heard is that what I've seen is that it looks great for a Wii game. You know, with that qualifier.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Interesting.
Are you thinking of the same game, Jolly?
Yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles. I've heard a lot of bad things about the graphics.
Wait, the Baja Men aren't cool anymore? Are we talking about the same Baja Men?
Who let the dogs out? Who?
And
who's talking about
on.
Gravity Rush?
Me!
God,
Steve.
Your segues are awful.
In, yeah.
I love them, though. I love them.
So I played a whole mess of Gravity Rush. Guys, guess what?
What?
Gravity Rush is the best game on the Vita.
Is it?
I'm dropping that right now. I'm saying it. I'm drawing this line in the sand. Gravity Rush, best Vita game thus far. So Gravity Rush. What do you guys want to know about Gravity Rush? I got notes on Gravity Rush. I can talk to you for ages about Gravity Rush, but...
Well, don't do that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to go for two. This podcast is already over, like, almost 2 hours long. What do you want to know about Gravity Rush? That's Gravity Rush, everybody.
What
Good night.
What's Gravity Rush?
So Gravity Rush is a new video game for the Vita.
We got that part. Tell me what this game is like.
It's the best one. It is... kind of hard to describe because
fuck guys
it's kind of hard to describe because it's not really like it is simultaneously I can draw many comparisons to it, but like it is so the sum of its parts is so different than anything I've ever played before that it is kind of intriguing. The best kind of comparison I can make is that it is sort of like Infamous 2 meets Japanese RPG meets the movie Dark City, but done in the like art style of like the Triplets of Belleville or the Sisters of Belleville or like the Illusionist, those French animated films. I don't know if you guys are familiar with these guys.
Triplets are great.
Are you being serious right now? Or
the Triplets of Belleville is a great animated feature.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if you'd ever seen it. Oh, okay. It kind of has that kind of feel to it, like the Sylvain Chomet kind of art style. It's like very Art Nouveau. So in the game, you play a girl named Cat spelled with a K, who has a regular cat, as in spelled with a C, that is also like a galaxy. And the cat gives her the ability to shift gravity in any direction that she points herself at.
My cat does that.
Does it?
Uh-huh.
Does it really? Okay. Well, fuck. Apparently, Gravity Rush is also based on a true story of Mike Bachman and his cat, Sparkles.
It's a cross between, like, my life story and 50 Cent.
Well, you do get shot 9 times in the opening cutscene.
We've jumped the shark. Moving on.
Yeah, anyway. So the point is that it is an open world game in sort of the vein of like an Infamous or something like, you know, Infamous 2 or a Crackdown like those games. It also has, you know, the city is full of like shards, these crystal shards that you can collect to gain experience points to power yourself up. And there are the kind of story seems to be about whether or not world is real, whether or not, you know, what we think is real is real. Like what does reality actually mean? There's a lot of, so like you're in this city that has been,
that is like a floating sort of in the clouds. Like at one point she tries to leave the city by opens up a door and like nearly steps off the edge. And it's like literally the city is just like a floating chunk of earth in the sky with no end to it, with no like that just kind of cuts off like the movie Dark City by the Alex Proyas movie. Actually it has a lot of things in common with that movie, but yeah, she's lost her memory. She does not remember what's going on because, hey, video game. And so she doesn't know why she's able to, this cat allows her to shift gravity or who she is or what she's doing or anything like that. But so she tries to kind of piece things together over the course of the game. And over the course, she pulls in parts of the city that have been torn apart by these gravity storms that are also spilling forth these kind of inky black demon monsters called the Nevi. So as you go along, you fight these giant monsters and you try to pull the city together and make it whole again and kind of unravel the mystery of what's going on. And it gets occasionally gets kind of dark. There's like dead kids. Like there's like a weird sort of like hook city of like Rufio and the Lost Children kind of thing, like that lives at the very bottom of the city, like underneath everything else, and they feed on garbage that people just throw off the side of the off the edge of the city because nobody wants to bother like recycling or anything, so they just throw their garbage off of the edge of their floating city, and it floats down to these children that are like feeding on the garbage because they can't get back up to the city because they don't know how. But yeah, back to the gravity stuff. So you like the basic, at its most basic, what you can like point in, like go into zero gravity, float up into the air, and then choose a direction, and you will fall in that direction. Gravity has now been switched. So like, say you point sideways at a wall, you will fly towards that wall. But once you hit the wall, now suddenly it's like you are standing on that wall as if that wall was the floor. And you know, you can use this falling ability to just sort of fly across the city. So the traversal by doing that is actually incredibly fun, and it's really, really, really fast. So you know, like, even though the city is quite large, you can get around from point A to point B pretty quickly, which is great because you want to see as much of the city as possible. Because, well, I mean, beyond just wanting to pick up these crystals to increase your powers, the city just looks great. Like I said, it's got that Sylvain Chomet kind of art style, that's Art Nouveau kind of look. And each district of the city, as you pull them in, it has its own unique look and feel and sound. The soundtrack of the game is absolutely fantastic. And each district of the city has its own kind of theme song that plays when you get there. The second city district, it has this really great sort of electro swing jazz kind of 1920s nightclub kind of sound to it. That's really, really great. I think the soundtrack is actually available for purchase separately online right now. But that's very good. Your gravity powers allow you, you can fly into enemies and kick them and crash into them like a fucking meteor. There's an ability that lets you it makes really good use of the touchscreen by like allowing you to put two fingers on the screen as if you were holding them like shoulder buttons. And your character, like, gravity will shift like at a diagonal, so suddenly you're like sliding super fast, like in Journey, and you will like kick into anything that you come into contact with, so you can slide really fast, get around the city that way, but then also hit enemies really easily with that power. But kind of what strikes me more than anything else in this game is just how great like the character development is, and how great, especially for a Japanese game, like it is a Japanese game, but like the way that the world kind of shakes out is so magic realism. Like the fact that it's a floating city and nobody seems to think that's weird, like it is almost dream logic, like we were talking about with Driver, like these monsters and these gravity storms, these black holes opening up and sucking people in, and like this creator of the world who can like he wears a trench coat, and he opens up his trench coat and he's got like his body is like a wormhole, and nobody seems to think any of this is odd. They just kind of move along with their lives. And Kat, the main character, is the way that she takes everything in stride, like the way that she just kind of accepts everything that she sees as normal and then just moves on with her life is kind of really interesting, just because it kind of bleeds beyond just that, just the way that the world works, and kind of into her interactions with other people. I can't remember like the last Japanese game I actually like enjoyed the story of, because it's constantly like really overwrought, melodramatic, like everybody taking everything really, really, really seriously, getting super emotionally involved and upset about like these really, really weird sort of things that are supposed to be metaphorical or something like that. But like, Kat is handled so even-handedly. Like, there is, like, she is a kind of a superhero almost, and she kind of gets treated as one throughout the as the game goes on. But at the same time, she has like concerns that, you know, that a normal human being would have, like a normal human girl for that matter would have at any given time. Like, she is there's this kind of weird thing where like people throughout the game are constantly like sort of propping her propping her up and being like, hey, great, like thanks for saving everything, but then like kind of making like sort of offhand and not necessarily malicious comments about her looks, just kind of like making fun of the, like, maybe saying that she's not super pretty or something like that, and she's just like, hey, fuck you, buddy, and just like flies off, not really getting, but like, if that was like if this was like another Japanese game, I feel like there'd be like, oh, like there'd be like a 20-minute monologue at some point about how, oh, nobody likes me, nobody thinks I'm beautiful or anything like that. She's just like, but she just kind of takes it all in stride, or like that, or like, and throughout the game, she's kind of like meets a couple of different guys that she kind of like thinks are attractive or something like that, but then like doesn't necessarily get pan out. And she gets like, I hate to use the term friend zone, but at one point she kind of gets friend zoned by this one dude, and she's just like, oh man, that's a bummer. And she's kind of upset about it, but then she's just like, okay, well, I guess I just move on with my life. It's not just Kat. There's other characters in the game too that like, especially the female characters, they just feel like they're treated like human beings, and I really enjoy that. The combat, I've seen a lot of people talking kind of shit about the combat of the game, which is to say that they don't like that the lock-on isn't good enough when you fly into the air and then like do a kind of lock-on kick, flying kick towards the enemy. I have had almost no trouble with that. I don't know if you can upgrade your abilities to have your lock-on be more effective and stuff like that, so I don't know if people are just not paying enough attention to doing that, because you like it's pretty easy to dump all of your points into traversal and not put any of your leveling up into and any of your level up juice into like combat stuff, because combat actually makes up a pretty minor part of the game compared to like just exploring and traversal and sort of platforming stuff like that too. There's a couple of annoying parts where they take away your gravity powers and suddenly like they just want you to jump and like treat it like a regular ass platformer, and it's competent in that respect, but at the same time you can never stop thinking to yourself, well, hey, I've got these crazy awesome powers that are super fun and unlike anything that I've ever been that I've played in a video game, at least that I can think of. Like, why am I in a part of this game now where you're not letting me use,
you know,
all that?
That's actually what I thought in Driver a lot of times, because every once in a while they'll have a mission where it's like, oh, okay, now you're not allowed to shift or use your boost or use any of your abilities, and you have to like complete this race right now. And I was like, this is cool, but this isn't the reason that I'm playing Driver San Francisco.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's more than one moment like that. There's a couple of – there's degrees of it. There's like at one point Dusty eats some poison. Dusty is your magical cat, by the way. Eat some poison, and so suddenly you can use your gravity shifting powers, but like your gravity shift gauge, which I should point out, you know, you have like a power gauge. You can't just use your powers willy nilly, but you can upgrade it pretty substantially so that it becomes a kind of a non-issue. But like there's this whole section of the game where your cat is sick, and you are kind of limited to how much gravity power you can use at any given time, and you know that. That's kind of an interesting wrinkle, I guess, especially when they throw a lot of enemies at you, so you have to be much more conservative with how much you use your power. But then there's other parts of the game where there's like this whole big chunk of the game right before the part with the like lost children kind of thing, where there's just this whole section of the game that is like written into the story, says like, hey, you can't shift your powers while you're here. And it's just this massive long chasm down, and you're supposed to like fall perfectly onto ledges and stuff like that to collect gems, and you don't take fall damage or anything like that, so it's not, you don't have to really worry about that. But like there's just like this huge long chunk of the game where you're just falling downwards and not able to use your gravity shifting powers for like, you know, maybe 15 minutes, and it just doesn't feel good. Like that's not what you want to do, especially when the game works. Like you guys did it, you've done it, bravo. why do you take this? Why take this away from me? especially for a launch joke like that. Another couple things about the game. The missions are actually really good length for a handheld game. They are maybe about 5 minutes a piece. Most of the story missions, like I said, some of the like that very long chunk where you are falling. You know, when you fall down from branch to branch to branch inside of this giant like tree trunk thing. It goes kind of drags on forever too. Is kind of part of the problem with it. And there's the side missions in the game are not really side missions. Like the open world in this part of the game is kind of excluded to the gem collecting, because the side missions are like challenges. Like you do a race, you try to kill this many enemies in this short amount of time. You try to do this race, but you can only use your slide ability. And those are fun, but they don't really have any kind of story to them. The way they're doing storied side missions is with the DLC, which I mentioned to you earlier, Dally. Which is that it's like every 2 weeks or something they're going to release a new side mission with a like this with a story like a side story. Like I know one of them is supposed to be like a murder mystery and stuff like that.
Side quest.
Don't like do it, you son of a bitch.
There it goes. Bum, bum, head and aneurysm just now. But so the weird thing about the side missions is that like, so Cat, I kind of went off to explain how Cat is a very, very humanized character, a character that feels both like a human and a video game character, but also like a girl. Like she feels like they don't feel like they're just trying to make her into like a male character in a girl skin or something like that. She does a couple things that you would kind of, I guess, I don't want to sound sexist or anything, but like you would kind of associate more with girls than with guys, like kind of stuff, I guess. But it never feels like too, you know, like it's trying to push too far to either side. But then the downloadable stuff is you get these side missions, but then each side mission comes with like a costume for Kat to wear in the main game. And her normal costume is like this kind of one piece leotard thing that's kind of, you know, you can see her, like you see her legs, I guess, like her legs are pretty bare, but like, you know, it's not like pushing her boobs out of her, out into her face or anything like that. Or they're like, she's pretty covered, and doesn't feel like they're trying to oversell the sex angle on it or anything. But then like these side DLC things come with like alternate costumes that are like, here's a maid costume, and here's a schoolgirl outfit, and here's, you know, a Catwoman costume from like Arkham City, except like with huge giant chunks cut out of the side of it, because hey fellas, like this is when you know that you're supposed to whip your dicks out. Ladies, if you don't have a dick, just go ahead and grab one of your fellas, he won't mind. Like just this
tough.
Huh?
Nothing.
I think you've lost like, it, Steven.
no, that was the point though. It's like it feels real gross, like mm-hmm. that the even like these alternate costumes aren't super like slutty or anything like that, but they are. I do get this weird feeling like, why do and I don't want to say it's just Japanese developers, but a lot of times it is Japanese developers have this like weird thing where they create a character, a female character specifically, that doesn't feel like they're trying to oversell the sex or anything like that, but then they, through downloadable content, they try to like appeal to the like the I don't know, like the 4chan fap crowd, like this gross kind of idea of like you want to pay the extra $4 so that you can see all of this digital ladies wearing no clothes kind of thing. Like it's they do the same thing in like Final Fantasy 13 2. Like you could buy bikini costumes for everybody in that game as downloadable content. Like they do the same thing in like every fighting game ever made. And it's just like, if I feel like I'm getting real mixed messages. And I guess on the one hand, it's kind of nice that, like, that's all optional stuff. Like, it's not like they're forcing you into doing that. But at the same time, it's like they're trying to monetize off of that kind of mentality, while creating like this great character that I really enjoy playing as and really enjoy like getting to know and stuff like that. But then, like, it feels like they almost undo some of that great storytelling that they create with this character. I don't know. But yeah, that's Gravity Rush. That's like all of Gravity Rush. I just told you everything. I'm
There's
sorry.
There's no longer a need to play the game. I think you've nope, explained
you're,
it all.
You're done. Yeah. No. But it's really good. The combat's really fun. The traversal is incredibly fun. Like the gravity shifting powers are just super neat. Like you can, there's another power that allows you to pick up people and objects like in the stasis bubble around you. And then they're just like floating around your head, but you can like pick up people and carry them around with you and then shoot them into the sky if you want. Or like when you shift gravity, it shifts gravity in like a bubble around you. So if you're standing in like a crowd of like innocent passersby, they all go flying off into the sky as well, but they don't have gravity shifting cars. So they just keep going instead of like stopping like you do. And so like it's just screaming people flying into the abyss, I guess, which no one ever seems to really mention. But yeah, it kind of, again, like even that, there's like a great mission that kind of uses that gravity shifting of power to do some kind of interesting stuff with the character, like the stasis bubble power that allows, like, you're carrying this dude around with you at some point trying to find his friend, and you're kind of taking him for a flight, kind of Superman style, like reverse role Superman, like where Lois Lane is a man and you are. And Superman is a girl.
All I can think of is like skeet skeet skeet, make it do the Superman. I'm a Superman that hoe.
That's so gross. No, but yeah, it's just really. It just on the story. If the game didn't work at all, I'd still think it was super interesting. Just for the really interesting themes that it pulls up in the story, great art style, great soundtrack. It uses the fact that it's a portable game to a great degree. Like the length of the missions are great. It uses like the accelerometer is great to change camera while you're flying through the air. It feels like a lot of people have been saying like this is not the Vita game you were waiting for. But damn, if I feel like this is the Vita game I was waiting for. I really really like it. It's probably one of my, if not my favorite game this year, definitely in the top like three games that I've played this year.
Mm-hmm.
So
sweet.
That's Gravity Rush. You guys should play it. Mike, I know you don't have a Vita right now, but when you eventually do get one, like pick up Gravity Rush. Like, get on it.
Thanks, man.
I appreciate it. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Dally, play Gravity Rush.
I think I will. I think I'll pick it up.
You guys have any questions about Gravity Rush?
Just listen to this podcast and hit the repeat button, because this last 40 minutes were all about that.
Hey, I've been watching the clock. It was like 20.
Well, for anybody who's left...
I'm sorry. It's just such... I just have a lot to say about it, and it's such a great game.
Yeah, yeah.
And I took notes and stuff.
Oh, see, that's great. That's me brushing you off. That's me trying to kill the podcast as best as possible.
Fuck you.
No, we've done a good job. We've kept it to about 2 hours. And we've only talked about games, just a little bit of news in there, but mostly about games. Real quickly, though, what do you guys got planned for this holiday weekend? You guys going to be doing anything?
It's a holiday weekend?
Yeah.
What's the holiday?
It's 4th of July is on Wednesday, so the holiday, you kind of think of the whole weekend involved, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Steam sale, yo.
Yeah,
that's coming up. That's right. That always happens, yep.
You know what I am going to do? I've been thinking about this for a while, and I keep pushing it off night after night after night. I'm going to play through Amnesia of the Dark Descent.
Okay.
God.
I'm going to do it, guys. I'm going to make it. I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to play it in the dark by myself with headphones. I'm going to do the whole nine yards. I do not know if I should be drunk or not. I'm not sure how much that would heighten the experience, or if it would lower the experience down. make it too simple. But yeah, I'm gonna. You guys think I can make it? Like,
I've tried. I actually got a decent way through, and then lost my save.
Oh,
so
get to the water part.
What's that?
Get to the water part.
Yes. Okay, that is actually the only time I can remember. And I played Resident Evil 2 when I was like real young, and that was still scary shit.
Resident Evil 2 scary. Yeah, it was pretty
yeah,
scary.
Yeah, but like that part was the only time where I can ever remember being completely frozen. Like I honestly, like I was so afraid of whatever that thing was that was coming at me, I could not move. And I got killed by it the first time.
Oh, so. Man.
Yeah.
Fucking, I generally, I don't, it's not like I have an aversion to scary games, but I don't play scary games that often. Like, I think like the scariest game I've played in recent memory is I played like the last couple of Silent Hills. I played like Silent Hill Homecoming and Downpour and Shattered Memories, and I haven't beat any of them. And I guess I played like the last one I beat that you could kind of qualify as a scary game is like Dead Space 2. So I'm not super used to it. Like, I don't know if that is better or worse for me at this point. Like,
right.
If that will make me more prone to being scared because I'm not used to being able to telegraph the moments, or if it'll make it like less scary. I've started the game several times. I've never gotten to a point where there are actually monsters for me to run from.
You just wait. It's seriously like the atmosphere in that game is really the scariest thing. And there's a few monsters, but that's really what makes it so scary, is that there's a few monsters and you have no idea where they're going to be or what's going to happen. It's entirely atmosphere is what makes that game scary.
I played the DLC. I played the Potato Sack Pack DLC. I played through that entire side story.
Yeah.
So I managed to get through that, I guess. For the potato, maybe. I don't know, man. That water part, like, I love swimming, and I'm still kind of afraid of the water because, like, man, like, just the water. Like, just,
oh,
general,
I mean,
like,
Swedes, big giant Swedes don't swim.
Or
Norwegians, or whatever you are.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of both, I guess.
Yeah. Just trying to keep it.
We don't have to swim. We just stand up in the water, and like we are taller than it. Like
punch a fish. Trolls and we got it. The trolls and Troll Hunter. You're just that damn tall.
Yeah, yeah.
Mike, so you got anything on this weekend, or are you just gonna be relaxing?
I'm gonna be paying attention to the Steam sale like a hawk, and I'm gonna buy more games than I'm ever gonna play.
Excellent. So you fit in my category whenever there's a goddamn Best Buy deal of the day. Today I bought three copies of America's Test Kitchen for the DS.
Why?
Because they were $2.99 each.
Why?
They were $2.99 each.
That's not a reason.
Actually, just letting you guys know, the 30th person to comment on this post is going to win a copy of America's Test Kitchen.
so try
Lucky
your hardest
them.
To be the 29th. That's the game that we're gonna play. No, I'll tell you what, you know what's gonna happen is it's gonna get to 25 comments and then no one's gonna comment again because they're all gonna be waiting for somebody else to do it. But
just pull a random number. Just pull
you're kind of like me with iPhone cables.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I never know when I'm gonna need more, so whenever like they're on Amazon for like $1 a piece, so I can like swim in iPhone cables. I'm like Scrooge McDuck except iPhone cables.
That's why I buy all my. I got Mod Nation Racers that way. I got America's Test Kitchen. I've got the deal this week was for SSX. So when I had like a $30 off coupon. They dropped the price to $39.99. I got SSX for $9.99. Brand new.
Fuck. Is that still going on?
It's still going on. Yep. I got.
How do I do this again?
Do you have the. Grab that magazine, At Magazine, At Gamer, whatever Best Buy puts out, and then just go and pick up. What's it called again? Just pick up the SSX. It's on sale this week. You get the magazine has the coupon.
The $30
for
off.
Like $30 off or something, which is crazy. Like I said, it's. If you're a. Cost-conscious gamer, usually about a month after a game launches, Best Buy will have some crazy-ass deal on it. Within 2 months after a game launches, Best Buy has an awesome deal on a game. And it's always something like $20 off or $30 off. And there's always a deal going on. And if you talk to your Best Buy guys enough, they'll let you know ahead of time what deals are showing up. And I think
if you jerk them off, like they will just give you games. Yeah,
totally. They're called Best Buy buddies.
They're called Breast Buy. No, I think it like a couple weeks ago last month I bought Resistance 3 and like two other games for like $4.99.
You cracked open that Resistance 3 jam yet?
Dude, you should see my stockpile. Speaking of which, your goddamn backlog article needs to go up.
Oh yeah, I was kind of waiting to see like. you know, where we were going with the
we'll talk offline. Like we'll talk offline. We'll talk offline.
Talk offline.
I'm going to be heading to Florida starting this Friday. I will leave the this Friday evening. I will leave the website in your hands, gentlemen, for the next few days. I will have my iPad with me. I will be blogging and writing, and because I'm a blogger, I'm not a journalist. I'm a blogger. And I will be doing that while I'm in Florida and playing in the sun and playing Order Up, apparently, because it's a vacation game.
Well, technically, you're not. You're neither a blogger nor a journalist. You are like a like a designer.
That's true. Technically, yes, because I'm trained to be a designer. Yeah.
But your real job is being a dad.
My real job is being Magic Mike, the stripper. And I have just downloaded the Dolphin emulator, and I can actually plug my take the Wii discs that I have and put them in my MacBook Pro and grab an ISO off of those and actually play that ISO on the Wii. So
exactly.
So that's actually pretty damn cool. So
are you in the ISOs going to fight Clue?
We'll see you guys in the next episode of The Side Quest. This has been a SideQuesting.com production. I'm Dally Domofsky. You can find me on Twitter at CoolRats. Also joining me was Mike Bachman.
Oh, yeah. At the Mike Bachman Twitter also. That's
Eric,
place.
Eric,
I like to put like a little hard emphasis on the V. So it's like the Mike Bachman when I think of it.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's – I don't know if I've told you guys this, but there is a Mike Bachman – and he's a walk-on roles on like NBC shows. Like he was the security guard on like the third episode of Up All Night, which is the I don't even think that show's still on the air anymore, is it? Wasn't that like
on,
a
I don't was even, he what, on Night is, Court? But was he on
what's
Night
TV?
Court?
What do you watch? I don't think I've watched like TV live or like on an actual TV cable.
Oh yeah, like no, me neither. But I downloaded that episode once I found out that he was in it just to look at it.
Did you feel like a connection to this guy?
I tweeted him. Speaking of which, I need to share this on the podcast before we go.
Do it.
Okay. I have been personally retweeted by rapper and song artist Ice-T two times in 1 week.
What? Yes. Now? Fuck yeah. That's awesome. Tell me how. Tell me why.
Okay.
I forgot about that.
I have been poking and prodding at this guy and just trolling him basically on Twitter for a year. Like I made it my personal goal to just make sure that I got a response out of this guy. I didn't care how. I didn't care what it was. I just wanted him to acknowledge my existence. And so like So yeah, basically I've been doing things like correcting his grammar and
you don't correct Ice-T's grammar?
No, yes
Ice-T
you do.
Ice-T corrects your grammar.
Yeah, basically. But like sometimes he'll say something that's just like really, really ghetto and he always follows it up with moving. And then I tweet him, I'll be like, do you even know what you're saying anymore? And like, but basically he last week he tweeted he tweeted this. He's like, in case you guys missed it, this is the best hip hop T-shirt ever, or whatever. And I tweeted back. I said, "What's hip hop?" and he retweeted that. And then I got my first 6 black followers on Twitter. So I'm proud. But actually,
Roll on, stop following you on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But actually, after,
that's the real mystery. The real discovery. Like,
I was sitting
here true IC stories.
I was sitting here trying to figure out, okay, well now, you know, I succeeded in my goal. Like who do I target now? I got to pick a new celebrity. So what I did was I picked another celebrity. I picked Ice-T again. And so he tweeted yesterday. He said true story there. Or he's like, yeah, he's like, honestly, there's not a single person who can tell me shit about hip hop that I don't already know. I lived this. And then people were saying serious stuff. Well, you know, it's not all about the MCs. It's about graffiti artists, things like that. And then I tweeted to Ice-T. I said, I know about hip hop. I've seen almost every episode of Fresh Prince.
And he retweeted it.
And he tweeted, ha ha ha, I'm done. And then had my retweet after it.
You and effectively so, trolled Ice-T. You shut him up.
I am now closer than any of you motherfuckers to having a walk-on role on Law & Order SVU. I am gonna be the special victim.
He's standing outside your God. Door right now.
Special guest stars on this episode of Law & Order SVU, Mike Bachman and Mike Bachman. Mike Bachman in the role of security guard. Mike Bachman in the role of SVU, or as a special victim.
So oh, that's my claim.
True Ice-T stories.
I've got street cred, and I'm actually considering if I should just start putting that on my resume. Celebrity retweets.
Oh, that's it. You know, I'm gonna work on ICP now. Insane Clown Posse is my goal over the next few weeks to just troll them so much they retweet me.
Yes,
Steven, you got to pick a celebrity now to do the same thing.
Does it have to be one I respect?
Hey, I know an actor.
Respect Ice-T.
I know an actor. You can get Mike Bachman to retweet you.
Actually, I've already gotten Mike Bachman to retweet me. So
has he really?
Yeah. No, I actually I told him
that's
this
so
is what
fucking meta.
After I found out about his security guard role on Up All Night, I tweeted to him. I said, "Hey, I showed up for my walk-on role on Up All Night, but they said somebody had already done it."
Jeez. With that note, everybody, I'm going to let you all go.
And I'm gonna... Wait, do I have to pick a celebrity,
yes, pick
don't
a celebrity.
I? I don't know any... I don't know celebrities except for the ones I like, and I do not want to tweet, like, try to troll a celebrity.
Here's a free one. Okay. David Hasselhoff, because he will follow you back on Twitter.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. David Hasselhoff. Done.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's your goal. Your task, Steven, is David Hasselhoff has to retweet you, and I have to get either a retweet or some type of response from the Insane Clown Posse.
Moving.
Moving.
Should we put something down? Which one of us gets our retweet first?
We'll put that in the post. We'll put that in the post, and then we'll just keep a running tally of whoever gets that retweet first wins.
But
the retweet or a response first wins.
Retweet or response?
Yeah, we just gotta capture it somehow. Just capture it, and you know,
yeah, screen
dump or shoot us. If you see somebody respond, followers. If you see somebody responding to us, one of the famous people, please send us a tweet or DM and let us know.
And. I want to put some stakes up. I want like one of us, whoever gets it, whoever doesn't get their celebrity to retweet them or respond to them first, has to buy the other a drink at next convention that we're all together at
Sounds
or the next
good.
Event.
Sounds good deal.
Got it. Gentlemen's agreement.
Gentlemen's agreement. Gentlemen's night to go to bed. It's my made no sense. That was a fucking horrible. I'm going to bed, fuckers.
We love you, listeners. Clearly,
we love you, listeners.
Wait, where can we find Steven on Twitter? Because we skipped him.
Where?
At the final, the final level.
Yeah, at final level. So you can find Steven Strum.
I'm at Steven Strum, STEVEN STROM, and then you can find my walk-on role doppelganger from the show Sons of Anarchy at whatever the name of the guy who plays Jax Teller on Sons of Anarchy is.
You can
called.
Find us on sidequesting.com, our Twitter at sidequesting. We'll see you guys later. I'm shutting this show down because I'm just sick of talking to everybody. See you guys.
God, peace.
Moving.
Steven?